Good evening. Good evening. Can I have folks take their seats? Welcome to the June 5th, 2018 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. Would y'all please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance? Roll call of members, please.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Morey?
Here.
Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Ms. Black?
Here.
Ms. Champion?
Here.
Ms. Dawson?
Here.
Mr. Granison?
Here.
Mr. John?
Here.
Ms. Kellis?
Here.
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Ms. Corman?
Present.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
14 members present.
I declare a quorum. We have the first order of business is a proclamation. I would love to invite Ann Corman to come up and read it and to join with Ann, members of the Finger Lakes Pulse who are here today.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Thank you, Martha.
So, before I read the proclamation, it's a proclamation to recognize or to proclaim lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, questioning, intersex, asexual, plus Pride Month in Tompkins County. And I have a couple of other folks from Finger Lakes Pulse, which is a local LGBTQ plus advocacy group. And I just wanted to say a little bit that each year, this is the second year that the county has done this and the second year that the county has raised a pride flag. And this year, I'm very happy to hear that the county is going to raise pride flags on hopefully all of their buildings. So that's each year. So each year we progress more and more, and we're in communication with other municipalities to possibly raise the pride flag and have proclamations and in support of this proclamation. And so I just also wanted to say, because a lot of some of my friends and people I know wanted me just to make sure that I said that there's still a lot of work to be done, and I acknowledge that. When I ran for office last year, Many people, including gay, straight, told me not to put in my literature, not to talk about that I was gay. And they said I would have a better chance if I just put that in the background. And I said that this is who I am. It's not the only thing I am, but this is who I am, and I'm proud of it. And luckily I'm here today. So, and also we have, I'm going to shout out to Shauna Black, who is also a member of the LGBTQ community. And when I went to my first forum that I spoke about when I was running for office, Shauna spoke a little bit quivering. I don't know if it was because she was nervous in one of her first forums or because she was speaking about her and her family. And it's, for myself, it's kind of scary sometimes still to speak out in public, and I want to appreciate all the support of the legislature here. And I'm going to read the proclamation. Whereas Tompkins County has been a leader in supporting and fighting for human rights, dignity, and respect for all people, and whereas Tompkins County was one of the first counties in the state of New York to pass a local law C, number 6-1991, amended in its entirety in 2004 as local law number 1-2004, commonly known as local law C, to protect against discrimination based on gender identity, gender expression, and sexual orientation. And whereas in passing this law, Tompkins County reaffirmed its commitment and responsibility to act and ensure that all its residents were afforded equal opportunity to enjoy a full and productive life, and ensures that the rights of all its citizens to make their own choices, follow their own beliefs, and conduct their lives as they see fit are protected. And whereas, which there's a lot of whereas as I learned in a, as being a legislature, whereas preceded by antecedent activities, the June 1969 riots at the Stonewall Inn in New York City sparked the modern fight for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer questioning rights. And whereas another more local landmark, the Ithaca 50, 2004 lawsuit in which 25 same-sex couples who were denied marriage license sued the city of Ithaca and the state of New York claiming that marriage prohibition was unconstitutional, further highlighted Ithaca and Tompkins County's commitment to LGBTQ rights, in this case supporting gay marriage, marriage equality. And whereas more lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, questioning, intersex, asexual plus residents of Tompkins County are living openly more than ever before, and whereas LGBTQ residents of Tompkins County have been and continue to be vital in our economic development, sustainability, and safety across all fields and professions, including military service, law enforcement, emergency responders, educators, and elected officials. And whereas, according to President Obama, our nation has made great strides in recognizing that these brave individuals long knew to be true in their hearts, that love is love, and that no person should be judged by anything but the content of their character. Now, therefore, I, Martha Robertson, Chair of the Tompkins County Legislature, upon recommendation of the Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, do hereby call upon all members of our community to join me in celebrating the contributions of our LGBTQ residents and renew our commitment and actions to eliminate prejudice everywhere it exists, and do hereby proclaim June 2008 as LGBTQ Pride Month in Tompkins County. I direct that the Pride rainbow flag shall be flown on the county's flagpole during Pride Month as a symbol of our steadfast belief in the equality, dignity of all Tompkins County residents. In witness hereof, I have hereunto set my hand and cause affixed the great seal of Tompkins County, State of New York, on this fifth day of June 2018. And so we have, as I mentioned, three members of Finger Lakes Pulse, which I am also a founding member. I would also like to recognize a couple of members that are not here today, Joanne and Deborah Cipolla-Dennis, who were also in the Ithaca 50, and I want to thank them for their hard work in this group and in LGBTQ rights. And accepting the... Who is going to?
I'll accept.
Yeah. Okay. Want to introduce yourself and say a little
Okay. Excellent. Thank you so much, everybody. As one of the founding members of Finger Lakes Pulse, I would like to thank this governing body for this proclamation supporting diversity and inclusion in Tompkins County. Thank you so much. We look forward to continued collaboration to support the needs of our entire community. Please join us for our June 30th Pride Family Picnic to be held at the Ulysses Community Park. I invite you to check out our Facebook page, Finger Lakes Pulse, for details of this event and future events. I'm Amber Harris, and thank you so much.
Minute thing to say, no more dreaming in black and white. We dream in color, all color. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you, Anne, and thank you all for being here and for continuing to inspire all of us. Thank you. I would like to ask for an executive session at the end of the legislature meeting to discuss a personnel issue. And I'm going to reorder some of the resolutions so that Sue Dale Hall doesn't wait have to wait through the whole meeting. Barb Ekstrom's issue is resolutions are on consent agenda, so that won't take too long. But we'll everybody be prepared to juggle when we get there. First, I have public privilege of the floor. I have two people signed up. If there's anybody else who would like to speak to the legislature, the blue forms are on the back table there. So for those of you who have signed the forms, here's what you agree to by signing. I agree to a three-minute time limit. I agree not to use my voice. I agree not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language, or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of the peace. I agree not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. After three minutes, I agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor. Transferring time to another person is not permitted. I agree that if I cause a disruption and I'm asked to leave, I will leave the chambers. First name is Jet, and then Faye Gugakis. Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Faye Gugakis.
Can I have 3 minutes?
No.
Minutes.
So it says here, transferring time to another person is not permitted, and you've signed this. So please, go ahead. Faye, just say what you need to do.
I think it's very cruel what you just did. I think your behavior is very cruel. I really do. And I'm not a cruel person, and I don't say things lightly, but I asked you for an extra minute, and you refused. And here's someone who doesn't want to use her 3 minutes, and you will not allow me to an extra minute.
Faye, just please go ahead. If you go a little bit over, as I've always
done. I need to know in my mind that I have some extra time so I don't panic. I have a panic situation when I have a certain amount of time. It would give me some relief.
Can you set the clock for 4 minutes? Okay, so we'll do 4 minutes and you can see, and I won't have to say anything to you. You wonder why
you lost the Congress seat, because honestly, character shows. And to me, I'm very sensitive to people's character.
Well, I just said yes to you, Faye.
Yes.
Okay.
But after a fight.
Okay.
My name is Faye Gugakis. I've been here since 1982. I've written a letter to the Ithaca Times, which the Ithaca Times now, after 4 weeks, has not published it. And this is why I needed the extra minute, because I want to read the letter to all of you about the Lyme bikes, which, matter of fact, I was shown a picture that was in the Ithaca Times. Martha, you riding the Lyme bike. I'm wondering what the conspiracy is, why such a short letter can't be printed in the Ithaca Times. And we'll read it, and you have a copy. I have lived in Ithaca since 1982. I do not own a car, and my bicycle is my life and in many ways my best friend. I want to see bike riders continue to be safe in Ithaca and have a place to park their bikes that is easily accessible and available. When the Lyme bikes were distributed throughout downtown, they were placed in many existing bike racks, places that are sacred to the biking community. I have tried to bring attention to the problem of abandoned bikes for a long time, for bikes being left in racks for long periods of time, which reduces availability to those who need the racks on a regular basis, but have not seen much action on this issue. Now the problem has been compounded by the Lyme bike program. The program was recently featured on CBS News as a problem in many cities, primarily because of the lack of a docking system. The Lyme bikes need to have their own areas for docking away from existing racks. In my conversations with the Lyme bike representatives, I have been told that they do not agree with this perspective. I urge the city, county, and mobility groups to rethink this program and its problems and seek out other bike share programs that exist and could better serve our community. Okay. So, the Ithaca Times, the editor, after being called 3 times, never returned my call. I feel silenced, for many years in this community, at least going back 20 years. I feel my voice is not being heard. I feel silenced. I feel blacklisted. I can't think of the word. You know, when you're just erased from the community. Okay, this is where the community could hear me, is on this mic for 3 minutes. Okay, my representative Rix John, you had offered an olive branch when Green Star kicked me out. You told me to say I'm sorry to them, and I appealed that decision. And yes, I am trembling now. I did not agree with you, because that was a betrayal to me, because they did not need an apology. And I went to that appeal case by myself, and they did not record it when they said they would. They did not offer any evidence to anything that I did. And right now, if you go to the West End, you will see the labels that are on the bicycle racks. It's something I fought for. Okay? I fought for. And you, as a lawyer, were not there for me. And this letter, because this letter is not being printed, because somebody is powerful in this community. Somebody doesn't want to deal with the problem that got me in trouble with Green Star. That is what I'm talking about. That representation, as you're I'm your constituent. So I have not called you because I don't feel you have helped me. And now we're dealing with a line bike problem, and I noticed last time you were silent. The last thing that I want to say, which is very critical, because I'm trembling, and I was trembling last night at the meeting last night in City Hall. There is an effort to bring dogs on the commons. There is an effort also to redo the laws of the skateboards. This is a travesty, and my representative Duxton spoke at that meeting and wants the playground to be reopened, which is another travesty. Okay, because there's a lot of dust from this construction. I have reached my limit of exhaustion in trying to deal with these problems and begging the city not to reinstate dogs on the commons. If anything, change the law of skateboards, which are extremely loud. I cannot fight this anymore by myself. I need help, and I don't know who to turn to. I don't. That's why I brought that up, because to me that was very hurtful, John. Very hurtful. And I'm not a liar. And I'm not a mean person. And I'm not saying that to be mean. I'm saying that because the truth has to be said. And I believe through truth and putting things on the table and clearing things, that's where true healing comes in any issue in this world. Unless we put our problems on the table and negotiate it, that's where the true healing is. But when I'm silenced, and when the police were called last night at the meeting, that was very hurtful to me. The discrimination against my character has to stop, and I don't know how to stop it.
Thank you, Faye. We will make copies of
that meeting last night was very hurtful to me. That happened in City Hall, and I don't know who to turn to. And Lou, the hot dog guy who brought a petition from all the merchants and lied at that committee, he lied and said that the laws cannot be enforced. It's so untrue. It's so untrue, and he lied, and he is so powerful because he has Gary Ferguson, who was at that meeting, who wants dogs on the commons, who never listens to me, who never wants to put decent signage. So thank you for the extra time. But really, honestly, we're talking about things that are so easy to be solved, and it doesn't have to get to this point, but I can't do it alone.
Martha, could Faye, I'll make copies of your letter and make sure everybody has them. Yeah, go ahead, Rich.
Thank you, Martha. Faye, I did want to just respond to one of the comments you made, which is that I don't think anybody thinks you're mean. I've known you for years. That's absolutely not the case. And I know you're as honest as anybody in this room. And I know you feel things really deeply. And if I hurt you in any way, I apologize. Okay? And if you want to sit down and talk, I'll meet you. We can talk further about the bikes or anything you want to talk about. Okay?
Thank you.
Thank you, Rich. And Faye, if you want to call me tomorrow, we can talk. We can't do a lot right here. Is there anybody else who'd like to address the legislature? Any other member of the public? Okay, thank you. I think George. Hi, George. George McGonigal from City Council. Would you like to report to the legislature?
Good evening. I'll just add on to Faye's comments. Faye, a lot of the things you're upset about are city issues. And as a member of council, I'd be glad to talk to you about them. The legislature can't really do much about what's going on in the commons.
But the city's not doing anything. This is what I'm trying to say. I'm reaching out for help because the issues we're talking about, they have not done anything for so many years. I don't know. I was trembling last night, and Lou, the hot dog guy, did not care. I turned my back, and he looked like, oh, I have it all made. You're defeated, Faye. That was the feeling I got. Why shouldn't I come before this council, this body? It's part of Tompkins County. My representatives are here. My representatives that represent the city of Ithaca. Why should I not come to you for that concern? That's legitimate. It's legitimate when the city doesn't do a damn thing.
Faye, George is trying to answer. And
no,
but don't you see what's going on?
He's telling me I shouldn't come here. Why should I not come here when the city hasn't done anything? When my own council representatives, Duxton and Murtaugh, do nothing. They want dogs on the commons.
Faye, you're asking some questions. Let George answer you, please. It's George's turn. Please.
I feel like I'm on a different planet. Doesn't anybody understand
George
what's happening?
George is trying to talk to you.
Do you understand what I'm saying? Why do you think I came back to the mic? Because they're not doing anything to help me.
He's trying to answer you, Faye. Please let him talk.
I'm not saying you, but it takes all of council to make a change.
True. And as I said last night, I'm glad to talk to you about dogs on the commons. Okay? Now, good evening. I don't have a lot for you this evening other than to say we meet tomorrow for our monthly common council meeting, and the main issues that we're going to deal with are whether or not to designate the Nines, the restaurant bar, the Nines, for historic preservation. I think that's going to draw quite a crowd. The other big item, there's two other big items. The Parks Master Plan will be up for a vote. That's a really important piece of legislation. And the third thing is the Brindley Street Bridge project has run into some significant added expenses. So we're going to vote on whether or not to fund that project additionally. Most of the increase in funding comes from the New York State DOT, the bigger requirements for the bridge. And soil solidity issues that weren't anticipated. So those are the three big things we're dealing with. Any questions?
The motto on construction projects is expect the unexpected. So.
Right.
Thank you, George. I've got Anna and Mike Sigler.
Thank you, George. A few questions about the park master plan. The vote on Wednesday is just to officially accept the plan. Is that correct?
Yes.
And has there been any discussion or are there any decisions going to be made about the component of the parks plan about decommissioning a few of the parks, neighborhood parks?
The language was, the suggested language was changed at the last planning committee meeting to basically soften the threat, if you will, of decommissioning four parks. That may get further modification at tomorrow's meeting, because that's a big deal.
And the other part of that is the governance structure that includes the county and the town as a potential governance structure, establishing a commission. Is that also something that's going to be talked about?
For Stewart Park and for the Lakeside Parks, basically, so the big parks, Stewart and Cass.
Are there decisions, is that in the timeline to make decisions on the preferred governance structure by the city?
No, those are worded as possible recommendations. There's nothing we're not going to vote on. Yes, we want the county to be involved in decision making and funding of those two parks, but those were recommendations to consider those as regional. Yeah, answer one of your questions for a change.
I got Mike Sigler, Henry, and Leslin, was your hand up? Okay.
I just have two quick questions, George, and I don't know if you can answer either one of them, but have we heard anything about the dredging of the inlet?
That's an excellent question. What's holding it up, the money's there. What's holding it up is creating a place to put the spoils. I guess it has to be covered. So that's going to be in the southwest park of the city, southwest of the city, but it hasn't been built yet. So we're thinking next year we'll start dredging.
So you're going to actually build a structure?
That's my understanding, but I'm not positive.
I mean, who's working on that?
Department of Public Works.
Okay. My second question is probably for them, too. You guys have done a lot of traffic measures in the city, like speed humps and, you know, those little turns. Do you have any kind of information about how those have worked? The reason I ask is there's a new bridge, well, a rebuilt bridge going in Dryden. There's one going in Ludlowville. And we're getting a lot of feedback from people like, you know, you're making this bridge bigger, traffic may go faster. Even though the bridge will be safer, they're worried that the traffic's going to go faster. So they're kind of calling. And I just didn't know if any of them worked better than others and who I would talk to about that.
Well, that's a good question. I think they clearly work. The ones around the schools clearly work. Are there any ones in particular you have in mind? Like the?
I mean, when I go home, I go down Tioga.
Tioga Street, the bike boulevard.
Yeah.
Well, when I drive on it, I have to go slow. So
I just didn't know if you had like an actual. I mean, you might.
I'll ask. Right. Tim Logue may have. They may have done a study about it.
Cool. No, that would help me out a lot. So thanks.
Okay.
Henry, Leslin, and Deborah.
Yes, George. You said there were four parks that changed. I thought there were five parks that were due to be alienated.
They're not due to be alienated. Is too strong a phrase.
Okay.
You may be right. I'm thinking of four. One in College Town. Two in Bell Sherman.
Right.
And one on South Hill.
I thought there were two on South Hill.
Oh, right. Five.
Okay. And also, I know that a couple of meetings ago, Duck was here and talked about the Lime bikes and talked about how they were talking to them about changing some stuff to make it so that people would not park on the stationary things. Has there been any discussion about the Lime bikes?
Yes.
And what's been discussed?
The Lime Bikes actually has hired, I don't know, three or four people to be liaisons, and I think they are using the stationary bike racks a lot less. I think it's one of those things that are just getting sorted out as it's being used. I see the Lime Bikes kind of parked together in various parts of the city, not on the bike racks. Some people still put them on the bike racks. There's been a big upswing in people riding on the sidewalks, which is another problem. But I think a lot of the problems are going to sort themselves out as people figure out what's good to do and what's bad to do. And I will say they do have people trying to educate the public.
Okay. Leslie, you're okay? Change your mind?
I change it back.
Okay.
Hi, George.
Hi, Leslie.
No, George, I just need clarification. What the city is voting on tomorrow is the information and recommendations that came from the company who did the whole study of the parks.
It's more than
voting
just
on it's not a master plan just yet, or is there?
Yeah, it is a master plan, yep.
That includes the recommendations from the group that did the study.
Yes, and recommendations from staff who also worked on the study.
Huh. Thank you.
I
might call you with some other questions.
Okay.
Thank you.
I've got Deborah and then Anna again.
Just quickly, George, thanks for coming. When you talk to your public works folks about the traffic calming measures, if they have any input on the impact that's had on their ability to plow in the winter, I would be interested in hearing that.
The plow guys don't like speed bumps.
So what happens when they get to a speed bump and they're plowing?
They slow down and they go over it, but they don't like them. And they don't like the corner bump outs either. But that's a trade-off.
So the issue is just that it slows them down? I mean, they can still plow over them?
Yep.
Okay, thank you.
Anna?
I forgot one other thing I know that's pretty controversial that you guys, I think, are going to be talking about. Is there a vote about whether or not to uncover or remove the current scaffolding around the playground on the commons? And I'm curious, I know that the drop zone goes maybe only 4 inches or something onto the playground, but the rest of it is technically outside the drop zone. I know it's very controversial. I'm curious what it is that you're discussing, what it is that you're voting on.
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up. Duxon is bringing forth a member-filed resolution to reopen the playground, with the exception of the little bit that's in the fall zone or whatever you want to call it. So I actually don't think it's that controversial. But we're going to vote on that tomorrow as well.
And construction will be 2 years. So if it doesn't pass, then it will not be available for 2 years. Is that correct?
I don't know the answer to that question.
Thank you. Anyone else? I have a couple questions about the parks. What does decommissioning mean? Like, they won't be city parks?
The consultant analyzed all the parks, and their recommendation was to decommission 5 neighborhood parks, and that would mean selling them or using them for some other purpose. And it's a state requirement that you would have to replace them with an equal amount of parkland. It wouldn't have to be 5 parks. It could be 1 park with X amount of acres. The basis for that, according to the consultant, was a couple of things. One, they didn't think they were used a lot, but also to make them usable, would require a lot of city money. And the one larger park on South Hill fits that category. Off of Hillview, there's a nice piece of land. It looks almost like just a grassy area, but it is a park. But it is it's got a lot of water runoff and a lot of drainage issues. So, and those have been increased by the development nearby. So it's a great place for kids to play ball or to have a frisbee thing. There's not much else there. There used to be a playground, but it's wet all the time. So in order to really make that more usable for the neighborhood, it would take quite a bit of money. So that was their reasoning there. The other one on South Hill is really small. It's just kind of a place to sit and think, really. And for some reason, they didn't think that was worthy. The biggest piece is Strawberry Fields out behind the Bell Sherman Annex. And they had one recommendation was to share use with Cornell University, and another recommendation was to share responsibility with the school district, which personally I think is not a bad idea. And then there's a very small park in Bell Sherman that I don't think they understood how important it is to the neighborhood. Right, Maple Grove. So each one of these parks has big-time neighborhood support. So I don't think any of them are going to be alienated.
Okay, and then the master plan. I'll go back to Leslin. The master plan, right? Furrowed brows, like you wanted to say something else? Okay. So the master plan you're going to vote on tomorrow. A couple of us have been invited to a couple of meetings with the city about the whole plan, not in a long time. So I don't know what, if anything, that means for the county's participation.
That was my question, so you don't have to come. I know we weren't that involved.
Okay.
Should I make copies available to you?
No, we don't want more to read. I mean, if the county...
Good call.
The question is the county... I mean, you guys can do what you're going to do. If you want the county involved, it's a little more than that.
Yeah, I suspect if we want to ask you to help pay for Stewart and Cass Parks, we might make you part of the conversation.
Yeah. Yeah, that kind of occurred to me. Dan, I'm looking at your body language.
Point taken.
Did you?
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, I just, you know, and seriously, if it's your decision, it's your land, et cetera. Okay.
Well, what the city's trying to deal with, like the county tries to deal with their responsibilities, is how to pay for things. And you could make the argument that Stewart Park and Cass Park both are used by not just the county, but the whole region. And they're both free. And I personally like that. I'm proud of that. But we're looking for other revenue sources. And of course,
I understand, George. All I'm saying is we haven't been part of the conversation in a long time.
Okay. So I will make that point to the planning board.
Leslie?
So, Martha, thank you. That's where I was going. That's why my brows were getting forward, because I don't remember us being as involved with a conversation. And I thought the county had committed some funding towards the consultation and so on and so forth. So if there's something being voted on that would then have some implications for the county, I don't know if George can bring that up. I'm hoping that somewhere phase two or phase three, there'd be conversation that involves the people who are interested. And
Dan was most involved. Anna and Dan and I were at least one long meeting, and I don't know who else. But Dan, you want to? Was a part of it. Okay.
Yeah, so we were involved in a phase one. And we were done with that one, and we're kind of waiting for phase two. And we have $10,000 in our contingent budget waiting to partner with you to continue studying the concept of some kind of joint governance model.
Okay.
Which
Thank
was the commission
you. I'll bring that up tomorrow night.
May I just ask a follow-up?
Yeah.
But if the city is accepting the master plan already, and that includes, if I understood you right, George, something around governance structure, might be joint governance structure, why are we studying it more? Just sort of how we make it happen?
Well, we're not voting to say this will be the governing structure of these two parks in the future. That part of the plan is suggesting different options, which include multi-governmental oversight.
Thank you.
So somebody who represents the city is welcome to come here and make a presentation like Mike Hall is waiting to make about the airport. You know, it's a full presentation, not just to a couple, three of us, but to all of us, so that everybody knows what's on the agenda, and then we have a chance to ask the people who are most directly involved from the city and really have a conversation. And then if there's going to be something that the county would do to follow up, we will say, okay, so-and-so, that you're the work group on that issue, et cetera. But right now we're just...
Okay, that's a great suggestion, and thank you for clarifying that for me, and I'll make that clear to city staff.
Thank you, George.
Thank you.
Anybody else for George? Quick, go. Run. Thank you, George. It's always wonderful to have your reports and your conversation. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it.
All right. Legislators. Anybody? Mike Lane.
Two things. One, had the privilege of attending the groundbreaking for the new child care center at TC3 last week. It was a hot day, unlike today. And a number of people were out there, including the architect and the representatives from the college, of course, and the foundation. And Mr. and Mrs. Arthur Kukas were there, who the facility will be named after because it wouldn't be there without their generous donation for the project. The other thing I want to point out is that this Saturday, come to Dryden. It's Dairy Day. And everybody could let out a big moo for our Dairy Day. Parade starts at 9:30 on Main Street. The festivities are in Montgomery Park until 2 o'clock. There's music. And there's games and crafts and ice cream sold cheap. I'm told Republicans will probably be dipping ice cream. And there will be chicken barbecues and hot dogs and hamburgers and a regular festival. So please come on out.
Thank you, Mike. Rich and then Anna.
I'd like to just share a short story about government, local government. Last week, I woke up at about 1:30 in the morning with a bat in the house. And after about 2 hours of very inartfully chasing and finally capturing a bat, I was left with thinking about rabies and what do you do with a bat that you've caught. And I thought, oh, I'll call the health department and leave a message. And so it was about 4 in the morning at that point. I called the health department expecting to get in it. Answering machine, and somebody immediately answered. And they said, oh, this is the answering service, and talked to me about bats, and gave me some information and said, but hold on, I'm going to have somebody call you. And within 5 minutes, somebody from the health department called me that was completely knowledgeable about what I should be doing about rabies and arranged to have me drop off the bat in the morning, which I did. Very happy to give them the bat. And they said, we will get this tested immediately and give you the results, which they did the next day. and it was negative, thankfully. But start to finish, it was entirely professional. I never mentioned who I was, and it certainly didn't matter to them. They just did their job on time. You know, they put me at ease. It was really good government service, and I wanted to note that. So thank you.
That's great. Thank you, Rich. Good. Anna?
And two announcements. Well, one is just a report out for anyone who missed the Ithaca Festival. The parade was fabulous, as always. A shout-out to Josh Dolan, who organized this year. There was a new thing that happened this year, which was, it's a craze that has happened in other states but hasn't hit Ithaca until this Saturday, which was a silent disco. And basically you have a headset, and it has three channels, and each channel is associated with a DJ that's on stage, and there's three DJs duking it out, playing music for hours, and it is very, very amusing to watch if you do not have headphones on, because you see about 200 people dancing their butts off in total silence. And every once in a while, a song will come on that one of the DJs puts out that is like a super hit, and all the colors of all the bands change to that DJ's color. And they all start singing out loud with no music actually playing. So it is one of the more amusing things that I've seen. There were about 100 people that got turned away because they actually did not even have enough headphones. I am hoping that they will do it again. So I just wanted to share that if you see it next time, please do go and participate, because it was an exceptional experience. Shout out to Ben Ortiz, who is the organizer, a DJ in town, who's a pretty fabulous DJ. So that's the fun, amusing shout out to Ithaca Festival. Thank you for organizing. The other is an announcement about a gun buyback that is this Saturday, June 9th, from 8:30 to 4:30. On airport property at Fire and Rescue. And the exact address of Fire and Rescue, my call, 72 Brown Road. The airport beacon is on the roof, and that is hard to miss. So please look for that. And I want to make a point that that is not about trying to get assault weapons off the street and every single gun off the street. Mostly gun buybacks get the guns that are sitting around people's houses that were inherited. Or guns that people bought but they don't want anymore. Those are oftentimes the ones that they get. Oftentimes they are handguns. But I do want to point out that, that many of the accidents that happen in homes happen because guns are laying around and aren't locked up safely because they aren't necessarily being used anymore. So it does make an impact, even if this doesn't affect the number of assault rifles in the community. So I look forward to people showing up, and that's 8:30 to 4:30 on Saturday.
Thank you, Anna. Anybody else? So I would just add thanks about the Ithaca Festival Parade to Marsha Lynch for organizing us and getting us there, getting blue shirts. And Barbara Ekstrom and her indefatigable crew, the Rot and Roll Band. And my husband loved them. He's not easily impressed, I will say. He thought they were great. Jeff Smith driving one of the highway trucks, and I'm sure I'll forget other people, but it was a great showing for Tompkins County, and thank you for Dan walking with us instead of being with the Stilt people, and Leslin and Ann, who came and joined us after your other group, so it was really nice to have everybody there on Friday.
I'm claiming workman's comp. My ankle hurts after marching with four groups. I had to come back and join you all, so yeah. That's when my ankle started hurting. I just want to tell Mike, I passed through Dryden yesterday, and it was really amusing and amazing and fabulous to see all the cows in Times Square. That was really fantastic. You certainly know how to market Dairy Days in Dryden.
Well, it's the Grange
production, and these aren't real cows. These are cutout cows that different businesses have decorated.
All right. If no other legislator comments. All right. Thank you. So we should bring the screens down and invite Mike Hall up to the table. Hi, Mike. How are you?
Well, thank you, and thanks to all of you for inviting me to share a few minutes with you this evening to bring you up to speed about our journey at the Ithaca Tompkins Airport. We have a decision to make this evening, and the focus of this briefing is going to be to provide you with the information you need to make that decision. There's a lot more going on up there, and I'll be back, believe me, many times in the months ahead to make sure that you're fully apprised of what's happening at the airport. Tonight we're talking about acceptance of the New York State grant that Governor Cuomo announced several weeks ago when he visited the airport. That journey started just about 2 years ago when we wrote a grant and submitted it to New York as part of the Upstate Airport Development Prize. A few months after that, the state got back to us and said, nice grant, but we want to split it into two parts. And the two parts, essentially, one related to the New York State Department of Transportation residency, otherwise known as a garage, moving to a piece of property that is owned by the airport. And the second part was the part inside the fence. The part I'm going to talk about this evening is the part that's inside the fence, because when all the discussion was done, the governor funded with $14.2 million grant the inside the fence piece and accepted responsibility for taking care of the residency relocation as a separate special project. And there's a lot going on in that regard. I'll be back to you as soon as we have some real facts to share with you. Among other things, I'll be going to New York next Friday for a meeting with the FAA and DOT to talk about the entirety of both projects. So after next Friday, we'll have a little more information, I think, to share with you. So the progress over the couple of years, I just quickly want to say thanks to Chairman Lane and Vice Chairman Klein at the time for their steadfast support of this initiative. Now Vice Chair Anna Kellis is the one that really got this thing to the attention of the second floor staff. And then Chair Martha Robertson drove it across the finish line. And along the way, Dave McKenna was there the whole time with the F&I committee. So let's talk now a little bit about the Ithaca Tompkins International Airport. Think about that. That's pretty special. I can't see the keys anymore on this with the light down, so I got to look up and see how I'm going to change slides. Let's give that a try. There we go.
There's a light here.
Where are we? Well, we are. I'm sorry?
There should be a light at your thing. You can point at it.
Oh, now I got my finger on it. I'm good. I don't have to see anything more for the rest of the briefing. Dan's going to help me out anyway. No, it's fine. So here's where we are and who we are. We are the one bright spot economically in all of upstate New York. 15,000 people from surrounding counties depend on us for their livelihood, and they spend that money back home. And our economy is driven around the largest employer in central New York and other important organizations, Ithaca College, Tompkins-Cortland Community College, high-tech industries, a variety of service industries. But we have an economy here in Tompkins County that is internationally intertwined. And so it's very important for us to maintain international connections in order to continue to be the one place in upstate New York that grows by 2% a year while our surrounding or our neighbors are declining by 2% a year. We do that with air service. 750 one-stop connections globally out of our airport. That's going to grow over time, and the quality of the service is going to improve over time because it's one of our top priorities. But for right now, we have a great deal more commercial air service in Ithaca than any other community our size. And that's because of the importance of that air service to the items that are mentioned in this slide. We are an international community, and we are a welcoming community. I thought it was a marvelous dedication at the beginning of the meeting this evening. Our community is a community where we speak your language, we cook your food, and you're welcome. A couple weeks ago, we hosted a conference called China Welcome. It was focused on the China market, only because we had a program that we could access, and also because the Pacific Rim population at Cornell University is growing in double digits. There are a lot of people that are from that part of the world here in our community, and we wanted to take a look at how we could be more welcoming to those guests and visitors. One of the ways we can be more welcoming to those guests and visitors is when we are more welcoming of our own citizens. And so this program actually has two tracks. You can't bring guests to your home if it's a disarray. And we know that the national political tone recently has been angry and divisive. Here it needs to be inclusive and understanding. I'm not sure if all of you are aware, so I'll say this evening, the two most diverse counties in New York State are Queens and Tompkins. One of them is easy to guess. The other one's where we live. And you have the community that you build. So China Welcome, the airport, all the activities that take place within Tompkins County need to be built around upholding the values of fairness, dignity, and respect for our own residents and also for our visitors. And that's what this is about. That's Ithaca Tompkins International Airport. And in October, we'll be getting service direct to Washington. In times past, I've talked to you about the fact that the East Coast airports are hopelessly mired in air traffic problems and weather issues and physically constrained so they can't add additional runways to address the growth. And United Airlines has made an important first step, which I think you will see replicated, and that is they're going to unload Newark Airport from the relatively smaller aircraft that fly short distances to feed that terminal. And they chose us, and they offered us Washington in exchange, and we accepted. Washington has as many international connections for Ithaca, but it also is a destination. A lot of people in this community need to do business in Washington. And while you can get to New York City in 4 hours or less on a bus, and get to Newark in a little over 3 hours, going to Washington's a pretty major exercise right now. You either have to fly through Philly or Newark, or you have to drive for 6 hours. So we're very excited about this service. We're going to work very hard to make it a success, because if it is a success, it will soon become 4 flights a day, and we will have terrific connectivity to the nation's capital. We are a New York-centric community, and I've had considerable expression of regret about losing Newark, even though the service has not been particularly reliable, and that's really nobody's fault except trying to pound a square peg into a round hole. I can tell you that we have had discussions with United Airlines about running a bus as if it were an air flight through the terminal, clearing security on this end. That's a totally new concept, but it's a concept that they recognize as being important to the future, because they're not going to be able to pack in more and more airplanes into these East Coast hubs. So we'll see how that plays out. So we haven't given up New York, but in the meantime, we're looking forward to the Washington service. Now, more to the point, to maintain our appropriate level of air service, we've got to renovate our airport inside the fence. And this is a rendering of what that's going to look like when it's done. Right now, if you look at the mouse, the departure gates are here. So we're establishing a departure arrival concourse, much like you see it at other airports. We're also puffing out the cheeks. I've told people, you know, if you want to know what we're doing, puff out your cheeks and stick out your tongue. Well, this is your tongue. And the cheeks are on either side. Over on this side, we need more room so you can walk past the people who are standing at the airline counters without having to walk through lines. And over on this side is the baggage makeup area. And the most immediate thing you'll notice is that that bag screening machine that sticks out in the middle of the public area is going to be behind the wall where it's supposed to be all along. So big security enhancements, among other things. And we've made a commitment to take the terminal through the course of renovation as much off gas as we can. You'll see our design criteria in a minute, but we also want then to power the electrical devices that replace the gas with as much solar energy as possible. Some of that solar energy will be developed on property. You can think right now that probably the short-term parking lot will be covered with solar panels, much as you see here. And we will also be putting in electric charging stations, all in anticipation and provisioning for more, all in anticipation that over the next number of years you'll see more and more electric vehicles on the road. One thing that's of note that's sort of beyond this discussion, but I want to mention it, and that is that airports nationwide are starting to have severe financial issues with regard to parking at the airport, which is a major revenue source for the airport. Once upon a time, we had contemplated building additional parking. I'm told by a number of different experts that between the shared ride services, the Ubers and the Lyfts and the taxis and the buses, and then soon to be autonomous vehicles that can take you to the airport and drop you off and leave, this is not a good time to be building a parking garage at an airport, because there are a whole bunch of parking garages around the country that are being converted to office space, believe it or not. So just so you're aware, we think we now have the parking we need for the foreseeable future, whereas 2 years ago that wasn't the perception. Okay, here's how we're going to do it. Our criteria are to make this as safe, efficient, and secure as possible for our travelers. We're going to maximize use of sustainable energy resources. And a big effort that has not been fully fleshed out yet is to welcome and inform our global visitors. I've reached out to Cornell, Ithaca College, and I will be talking with TCAD and others about how we can decorate the terminal, if you will. That's a big item on the governor's list of what has to be done, so that you know that when you're arriving in Tompkins County, you're arriving in a community that has values of inclusion, that there are international opportunities and connections here. So designing the whole display, if you will, is a major part of the grant, and certainly any input or ideas that anybody in the community has will be welcome, because we're in an early stage on that right now. There's a separate piece of paper that lists, probably about 20 specific requirements from the grant that you'll be asked to act on this evening. Distilled down, this is what they amount to. But that expanded list is the list that the state uses to hold us responsible for the execution of the grant. In other words, every one of those things has to be done. Several of them have already been accomplished, because it's been 2 years since we proposed what we were going to do. So we're ahead of the timeline right now. We've got some real challenges, however, because the project needs to be complete by the fall of 2019. And to make a major construction project like this happen in 18 months is a challenge. By the way, the residency relocation also has to be done in 18 months. So that's going to be a fast-moving project as well, although we will have very limited responsibility in that regard. Our responsibility is limited essentially to working out the land deal between the airport and the New York State Department of Transportation. And then after that, it's all their responsibility. And that's actually a good thing because while we are, for example, having a meeting tomorrow about ways that we might collaborate and share services, we don't need two big construction projects at the same time. We're going to have our hands full taken care of inside the fence. Okay, we originally proposed $14.2 million. This is in the revised submission, requiring $7.8 million additional funding, but that was 2 years ago. So we went through a reevaluation process. CNS Engineering took each of the 20-odd standards that the state was going to, or outcomes the state was going to hold us to, and they put a price tag at each of those, and they added it up. I went home, poured a drink, got a dart out, and threw it at the wall, and we came up with the same number, which is about 24.7. And it does include concerns about the bidding climate, the costs that we may have to pay for steel as a result of the international trade shenanigans that are going on, et cetera, et cetera. It's as good a number as we have right now. It does include contingencies. So it's a conservative number. But that means, however, that in accepting the New York State grant, the airport, the county, is responsible for $10.5 million, and that's a moving target. It could turn out to be 8, it could turn out to be 12. It's just 10.5 is the best we can estimate right now. We'll see when the ribbon cutting takes place 18 months from now how it all turned out. So how do we propose to approach a $10.5 million obligation? Well, here's what we've got. We already have committed $2 million federal dollars. For those of you that were involved in the Jet Bridge resolution a few years ago from the legislature, no more need to worry about that. The jet bridges are being purchased with federal dollars, and that's the $2 million. We also have some airport fund balance, and in the interest of getting out of here this evening, I won't ask Rick to explain this, but we'll have a sidebar meeting that anybody that wants. Essentially, we overpaid on debt over the last couple of decades, and so we've got some balance, and we've committed some of that to this project. So if you do that, we're left with a requirement for $8 million, because the grand total is 10.5, so we're back down to 8. The column on the right indicates some places where we may get dollars to support that $8 million requirement. And obviously, these are all grants that are out there awaiting action. And believe me, we're spending a lot of time working on getting awards because it's very important to addressing this county obligation. Okay, best case, we wind up with $2.5 million more than we need. Now, this is just grants that are out there right now. As recently as 4 o'clock this afternoon, I had a lengthy conversation about the FAA $5 million number, because that's pretty important to us. That is a small chunk of $1 billion that the federal government has added to this year's transportation budget. So this is money that theoretically needs to be committed by September 30th this year. The source that I talked to indicated that we, the Ithaca Tompkins Airport, is in very good standing on the list of who might qualify to have a piece of the $1 billion. That and a couple bucks will get you a coffee at Starbucks, but it's better than hearing that nobody's willing to consider you, right? So we're headed in the right direction on the FAA money. That will be part of the discussion next Friday, not this Friday, but 10 days from now, except that typically within a large bureaucracy, the people that actually have to execute the money don't really know what's going on right now. This is still kind of being worked at the Washington level. In addition, we've asked the Power Authority for $1 million related to the geothermal conversion, which is a $4+ million lift on the terminal. And we have proposed to NYSEG for under their no-pipe alternative. And any of these, all three of these potential sources are in play right now. But let's say it's the worst case. We've got a bond and pay. Let's look at $8 million. First of all, before we go to totally the $8 million, let's assume we're going to be 50% successful. And if that's the case, it takes the amount that would need to be bonded down to $3 million, and we would pay the debt service on that with a passenger facility charge, which is something that's already in place. You get to charge a little more than $4 a head for people coming through the terminal. That number is supposed to increase. There's a Senate interest, federal Senate interest in increasing it by a factor of two. But that's a reasonable kind of number, and that's a target that we're holding tight. But if it doesn't happen, here's what it would cost. If it does happen, it would be roughly $225,000 a year. If we don't get any money, it's $600,000 a year. We obviously need to keep you fully informed as we proceed from this evening forward about what the likelihood is and the expected amount from each one of the external sources we're trying to draw money from. But as bad as the $8 million is, it's within the art of the possible. It's not a place we want to go at all, but it is manageable under certain circumstances. So on that basis, I'm recommending that we accept the grant from New York State, understanding that when you accept the grant, they're expecting you to do everything that they require, and to do that requires a significant county federal contribution, and there's some risk associated with that. That's
it. Thank you so much, Mike. This is really helpful. This is really important for us to see. And let's take a little time on questions, and then we'll go to the resolution. So I'll start with Mike Lane, then Rich.
Mike, could you mention about the customs facility?
Certainly. Part of this project involves building an FIS, or a federal inspection station. That will be placed between the general aviation or Taganic aviation ramp and the terminal, so it can serve both general aviation and commercial. We were originally going to site it up by the crash fire rescue building, but it couldn't have served the terminal. And while we don't expect anybody to start flying from Frankfurt to Ithaca, we do have the possibility that Air Canada would provide service from Toronto. And that service is pre-cleared in Canada, but it has to come to a location where there's a customs facility. So rather than have the customs facility restricted to just GA, against the future possibility of Canadian service, and it would just be like Montreal or Toronto, we've cited it now so that we can accept people into the terminal off an airliner from a place that's pre-cleared.
Thank you.
So that's why you get to say Ithaca Tompkins International Airport on the front of this?
That's true. And a large share of the traffic will be, I'm sure, international private jets associated with the high-tech industry and with Cornell and Ithaca College. There's quite an accumulation of that traffic right now on the ramp. Right now they have to stop someplace else at clear customs, which sort of defeats the purpose of flying direct. I also think we'll get a big push out of light airplane pilots in Ontario because my conversation this afternoon was with the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association, and I asked them to give me every piece of advice they could about being a GA-friendly airport. And I understand most of that, but I want to hear from other people as well. And I think we'll get quite a few people flying in from Ontario and Quebec to take advantage of the many wonderful things that we have to offer in this community.
Thank you. Rich and then Anna.
I was curious about the PFCs. It looks like there's a substantial amount there that could be applied to debt service, but would that be taken away from some other use to do this if we needed it for debt service?
Well, the very quick answer on PFCs is that they are very restricted about what you can use them for. And this project is one of the things you can use them for. If you don't have something to use them for, you can't collect them. So this is an odd situation where you take a mortgage on the house anyway because you've got a way to pay for it. That's one piece of PFCs. The second piece is that, that amount of revenue does two things. We use it to pay debt service. We're just finishing off paying for the terminal that was built 25 years ago with some overpayment available to us. So it's lost my train of thought of where I was going with that when I said we were going to play the other. But the importance of the PFC dollars overall is to do two things. Now I got it. One is to pay debt service. The other is to pay the local share of federal grants, which require 5% local input. And so you don't want to spend all your PFCs on debt service. You want to have some reserve in the PFC account to spend on federal grants, which are also approved for PFC use, and that's why we would certainly obviously want to keep the bonding lower. The other thing is that the lower we bond, the sooner it's paid off, and we'll have plenty of other projects to use PFCs on, but I hesitate to, if there's a way to avoid committing ourselves financially as far in the future as we did the last time, we obviously want to do that. So the sooner we can pay it off, by then we'll have new projects that we can use the PFCs for.
Thank you.
We got Anna and then Shauna.
That was my first question, so thank you, Rich. My second question was with the possible sealed bus to Newark. Just wanted to get a little bit more information because that's the one thing that my constituents seem to be asking the most about.
Okay.
And whether or not I know that there is one from Philadelphia that this is
Allentown.
Right?
Allentown.
Oh, Allentown.
It's not
this
sealed.
One's longer distance.
Yeah,
so
and it's not sealed.
Possible. Right.
So, look, the idea of a sealed bus is pretty simple. You have to go through security to get into the air system, right? That's TSA. And you have to do it somewhere. So if you get through security at Ithaca and you get on an airplane, the assumption is that you're not going to get off the airplane en route to
Mike,
where
just,
you're going.
Just a second. George, could you go out in the hall, please?
If you get on an airplane...
Okay. Sorry.
If you get on an airplane, there's an assumption you're not going to get off, right, since D.B. Cooper. So, on the other hand, if you get in a bus and it stops at a rest area, you just blew security, right, because you went through security and you were screened and all that sort of stuff. But in this day and age, you could very well seal the bus electronically or with physical seals. It'd have to be something that you could break, if you had an accident and you had to get out. You get to Newark, and if the seals are intact, you're good to go. You go right to the airside to your gate. You're no different than an airplane. Nobody's done this, but it makes way too much sense. And so for those of us that suffer flying into high traffic density, bad weather, we're close enough to take the bus. It's almost as fast by the time, the only time you would ever beat it with air service is on a really good day when there are no delays and everything else. It might even work for Philadelphia. It certainly works for Newark. And there are plenty of stories about people getting stranded in Newark and Philly, coming back at the third turn of the day or the fourth turn when all the airplanes are behind schedule and it's a big mess. Makes a lot of sense. Now, Washington's too far, Chicago's too far, Charlotte's too far. Those are airports that we could fly to on jets. So we're trying to, the objective of this airport is to get you safely, affordably, and efficiently where you need to go. And I don't care whether that's in an airplane or on a bus or whatever, we're a transportation hub in my mind. And so if we can get the airlines to run this, we still get to charge passenger facility charges. It all counts in the game, you know, the bean count of how busy the airport is. It's an idea that I'm glad that they have said that they want to work with us.
Have the airlines shown interest?
Yes.
Do you think this is real?
Yes. Not only that, but most of you know Tom Colbert, who's with Pajanski up at Integrated Properties. His son, Matt, is now responsible for New York for United Airlines, meaning not just New York City, but like us. And so we have an Ithaca High grad with a Cornell degree to speak with about some of these innovative kinds of things. And I think it's totally in keeping with the, you know, everything that we've said about this community. You know, we're innovative. We're looking for new solutions. That makes a whole lot better sense than trying to fly to a place where you know you're going to wind up in a holding pattern, or worse yet, you're going to sit on the ground
hours.
So does that count as an emplanement?
Well, that's the whole point, is I want the airline to run it so it counts as an emplanement. We could get somebody like Cornell Bus to run it, but I want it to be integrated. And to do that, it has to be the airline. And they want it to be integrated because they want to capture you at your origin and flow you right on through their system. And this way, somebody would handle your bags, and it would be just like you flew, only you would have been flying low for a while.
Yeah. That's great. Awesome.
Sean, we'll be back to you.
Sean, and I think Deborah probably has some more lozenges if you need them. Is your throat okay?
Yeah, I have allergies.
Okay.
I just had some questions and honestly, some concerns about some of the costs. With a larger airport, I think it goes without saying that there are going to be an increase in operating costs. And I wanted to know if there had been a projection of increased revenue that you would be receiving.
There is, and we expect our budget to remain essentially flat. We found some additional potential savings for 2019. We are really... I mean, right now, the cost per emplanement in Elmira is $45. The cost per emplanement in Binghamton is $90, and we're in the low 30s, and we need to stay there. We're very, very focused on, well, for example, by converting the terminal to geothermal, it costs us $4 million to redo all the systems, but we save $50,000 a year in operating costs. So if we can get those capital dollars brought in, then when it comes back to, you know, how we're going to pay the bills on a recurring basis. So we're very focused on that. And this new terminal, although it's a third larger, should be about comparable in terms of, I mean, we don't have to pay for fixing mechanicals. Right now, everything's breaking. And this will be new mechanicals for a while. So we're very concerned about that and paying close attention.
So would there actually be an increase in revenue that the airport receives?
The increase in revenue that the airport receives comes from a variety of things. Emplanements are up. The airlines seem to understand this presentation, which is if you're going to invest strategically, this is the airport to invest in. And the state seems to understand that. I mean, you know, the other upstate airports, 70% of the people are leaving town to spend money, and when they come back broke, that's not economic development. This is 50% of our people are coming to Ithaca, to Tompkins County. So I think it's pretty well understood. Does that mean we're going to keep and expand air service? Yeah, I think we've got as good a chance as anybody, but, you know, it's a dicey game. So, yes, airport revenue will be up. We also, for, you know, every day we find new ways to extract value. And right now we are not charging a passenger facility charge for car rentals. That's like $4 for a car rental. You're not going to miss it, and it's going to add a significant amount of money to the airport revenue stream. We're doing everything we can to make that enterprise unit healthy.
Thank you.
We got Henry and then Deborah.
For the PFCs, that's done by everybody who flies in.
Right, it's done by the airlines. If Delta Airlines brings 50,000 people to Ithaca, they owe us $200,000 at the end of the year in rough terms.
Okay, so by moving the thing to D.C., by only having two flights there, aren't you, in fact, lowering the number of PFCs that you're getting overall?
Yes. That's correct. And if it goes to four, we'll be ahead. So you're right. There are a lot of fluctuations throughout the year. For example, we have normally three turns by the airlines, but over the summer for a month, sometimes something will drop out and then come back in. So you've got to look at it at average over a whole year. And part of our risk reward with Washington is we need to get to that four turn. But we're also growing across the board, and the size of aircraft is growing. People have asked me, does this mean the airport's going to be busier? Well, it'll be a little busier, but mostly what's going to happen is you're going to have bigger airplanes. The 50-seaters become 70-seaters. The 70-seaters become 90-seaters. More passengers go through the terminal, same number of flights. So there's a certain amount of risk there, as you've correctly identified, but that's part of a business game that gets played on a daily basis.
Are the PFCs standard across airlines?
Yes.
Across state?
No, federally set limit.
Okay.
Yep.
I've got Deborah and then Amanda.
Mike, we know that a lot of people got this across the finish line, but this was your vision from the beginning, and I want to thank you for that. You have the big picture.
I appreciate that, but I'm not going to step away from the fact that without most of the people in this room and most of the people when the governor was here, we never would have gotten to this point. This is not something one person gets to do. It's something we get to do if it's important, and I hope I've made the case that I think this is important to the community.
But as Sundance said, you just keep thinking, Butch, because that's what you're good at.
Nice.
So a wise man once told me, if you take credit, don't expect people to rally to help you. And if you share credit, you'll have an army to support you. So I believe in the latter philosophy to my heart.
Excellent. Wonderful. Amanda.
Thank you for that little tidbit, Deb. I'm just wondering the timeline. And I know the project needs to move very quickly.
Yeah.
When will we know how much money that is needed? Like, how's it look?
Well, I guess when the final check's written at the end of 2019. We have a superb relationship with CNS Engineering. They've done this twice before with the same cast of state characters. They're very good at what they do. I feel quite confident about their estimates, unlike mine, although they came out to be the same. I think my commitment is that we will be back to you in committee form and then before the entire legislature as the committee is deemed necessary as this whole thing unfolds. The next real exciting point is what happens with the residency, getting that deal straightened out. Jason and I are working that deal. We'll get that codified, let you know how that came out. After that, in about that same time frame, we hope to hear from the Power Authority and New York State Electric and Gas about where they stand on this. And the end of the federal fiscal year is 30 September. Not that anything out of Washington has happened anything like on time, but that's an idea of when we might hear about the federal money. We need to go out to bid about that time so that we can start construction before the snow flies. The first thing that's going to happen right now is getting the foundation laid on the departure concourse or departure and arrival concourse, and then hopefully they can frame it up and we'll have, be able to work over the winter. So that'll be a very telling bid, and then there'll be some more bids like the customs facility, which is really they have a standard plan for a customs facility. So it's not like there's a lot of engineering involved in that other than making sure you can set it on the ground properly. So that's a little bit of an idea of the time frame. By a year from now, the departure arrival concourse should probably be open with the jet bridges installed. We'll be then working primarily on pushing the cheeks out. A lot of that happens behind the scenes, so we're going to keep fully operational throughout this period, but you'll see those signs, pardon our dust and renderings. And then finally, we do the interior decorating, which to me is this hugely important piece of letting people know, because 50% of our traffic is arriving, let them know where they have arrived. Let them know what our values are, you know, including the resolution that was passed, the proclamation that was passed earlier this morning. We are the community that we build, and shame on us if we don't break the silence when somebody, you know, challenges the values of our community. So there's 18 months. It'll be fun.
All right. Okay. Henry, and then I want to ask a couple questions. I'll go to Henry, Ann, and I want to ask a couple questions, too.
Oh, also, when you talked about the interior design, did you mention TC3 also?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
Yep.
Also, I was wondering, and this is a question for you and maybe Jason, is that we know that building lately has been inflated, that the costs have been higher than anticipated. Are your costs also, currently include those higher amounts?
Yeah, we don't know what higher means exactly, but CNS's estimates included, an escalation factor based on the current market. Now, I'll tell you that we also hope and think that a lot of projects will be wrapping up this fall, and our timing might actually be really good, but we don't know that yet. So there's some real excitement on the bid process, but that's, you know, that's just the way it is, you know. And again, you know, we talk about this with the state on a weekly basis right now and with CNS on a daily basis. And, you know, if there's anything that appears to be outside the envelope that we've described, we'll be back to you immediately so that you're fully informed on this.
Yeah, the only thing I would add is we've had this active conversation for the better part of 2 months.
Yeah.
And, you know, Mike jokes about you'll know the final cost. You'll know the final cost when the project's over. But at the end of the day, I think every week, every month that would go by, you hone in a little more and a little more. I think you have the best estimate right now that you can have based on the information you have. And we'll continue. Mike and CNS will continue to update it. And as things change or go up or down, we'll be able to do that. I think right now, considering the information we have the best estimate we can have at this time.
And we're coming down a funnel, as Jason points out. You know, with everything that is in the rearview mirror, we know better what it's going to turn out to be. So the risk, the unknown risk will decrease with every step forward.
I assume that the renovation of the airport would not affect any other flights coming in?
We will support a full schedule, yes. When you say it won't affect them, it's not going to be as pleasant at times, but we're supporting a full schedule. And we've briefed the airlines, and, you know, their response was when this starts to come together next spring, we'll talk about expanded service. So I hope that the climate is such that they're willing to consider that at this point. That's spelled Charlotte and Chicago, you know, the C's. Jet stage links to airports with great connections is what we need since we got jets now.
Ann?
Thanks, Mike. As far as the runways, I know you said before, and I just wanted to reiterate that because some people have been asking about that. So the runways don't need to be expanded, and I'm glad about that. And just wanted to ask you, the PFCs, now if they go up, or it sounds like they are going up, that's a limit. That's not saying that we have to increase.
That's correct. It's a federally set limit, and that's an ongoing management discussion. If we don't have things to use the PFCs for, we don't need to collect as much. And on the other hand, if you fail to have projects that are eligible and you're not collecting, at some point you'll wind up with, you know, a bunch of bridges that need to be repaired and no money to do it. So that's an ongoing discussion that we have to have. But that plan, that money, is applied to a plan that is negotiated on an annual basis with the FAA. So it's part of a rather elaborate construct, not just let's do this. You know, there's a big approval process.
Does your slide show you've got $4.39 times 100 passengers?
Current federal limit.
So every leg, if I go away and come back, I'm doing twice that?
No, you're doing on a basis of 100,000 enplanements out of Ithaca, you're doing $4 a person, so it adds up to $400,000 in a rough sense. It's not every leg.
Okay. All right. I want to make a point that I think you and Jason have both mentioned that the state is on kind of a six-week reimbursement schedule, if I'm correct, something like that, so that it's not like we have to do the whole thing and they'll pay us back after.
Right. We did not discuss cash flow this evening, but this is a high-priority project, and we are the fifth awardee. So they've had four other awards to work the process of approval and reimbursement. And we were told that at first there was a learning curve and it took longer, but we were told to expect a six-week turnaround, so provided the paperwork is straight. Our record with CNS on this kind of paperwork has been outstanding. They do the paperwork. They do a great job. They've already practiced with two other places, so we're pretty confident that we can turn the cash flows around. Now, we're going to have to be careful and work with Rick to make sure that even a six-week turnaround could be problematic. We got to watch that. That part of the financial plan is still unknown to us, and so we have to, you know, we can't really deal with it until we get a little more information. But cash flow management is a factor, but probably not as big a factor as it would be if this were like a normal state grant, for example.
Right. Could you go back to the slides? Jason, did you have something to add to that?
Other than, you know, we're working with the CNS to get us a cash flow estimate. And when they get that, then we'll get together with Rick and try to figure out how's the best way to float that cash. You know, it's going to depend on when high construction payout is. So when you have high peaks in construction, that's when the payout's going to be high, and that's all be factored in. So it's an ebb and flow process, and, you know, we'll get together when we know a little bit more to determine how we're going to finance that short term.
And I recommend Rick's audits. When he got done auditing PFCs, we had a pretty good bank balance left.
Speaking of that, you say you've got $500,000 in the fund balance. Is there not?
No, we have. It's not as simple an answer to that. But we said we've committed $500,000. We actually have more of it, but it's not immediately. You couldn't write a check on it today. I don't want to get Rick involved in a half-an-hour discussion, but we feel confident that we can commit $500,000 if we need to. If we don't, it becomes part of a contingency fund that is there for the day that we have to replace the roof on the CFR building, which we had to do out of our own pocket and things like that. So we'll be working that, and
But that's my question. So that's not taking the fund balance to zero.
No.
Okay, good.
No.
All right. Would you mind going back to the rendering of the airport? And if you could,
it got ahead of itself here. I'm getting there. One more.
Great.
Okay, there we go.
So it looks like five departure gates, right?
There are six gates. Four of them have jet bridges. They're two ground level gates right here, and then there are 1, 2, 3, 4 jet bridges in this configuration.
Oh. Where are the ground level ones?
Here and here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I was unclear.
But in case we get a turboprop airplane or something that can't use the jet bridge, less and less likely over time. In fact, the Embraers that United and American fly don't even have stairs on them. You got to either give them a ramp or a jet bridge, one of the two.
Could you use the cursor and outline the outline of the airport right now, of the terminal building right now?
Okay, right now, the gates, the single jet bridge we have is here. You go up that ramp and back out and into the jet bridge and into the jet. Okay, so this whole thing is added. This is 135 to 150 foot addition. You notice that this entrance is different in this rendering. Right now you walk in back here. What we're going to do is push out the wall a short ways on your left as you walk into the terminal. so that if there's a line at the airline counter, you don't have to walk through the line to get to where you're going if you're all checked in. And then the current wall is right here on the other side. And behind, I'm sorry, that's the cafe. The current wall is right here. And this is the what's called the baggage makeup area, where your bags disappear behind the wall and you wave goodbye and hope you'll see them again someday. That's where they make up the load, and then they take it out and put it on the airplane.
And the side where the baggage claim is that going to change? Is that bigger than it was than it
much,
is now?
Yeah, considerably bigger.
No, I mean, isn't the other side where I pick up my bags? Isn't that the other side?
Oh, no. Where you pick up your bags stays the same. Okay. That stays the same.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Essentially. I mean, everything gets a cosmetic overhaul inside, but in terms of pushing out the terminal, it's on your left and right as you walk into the terminal and then straight ahead in the departure area. And there'll be a double lane for TSA. That's another fight. Do we have enough people to warrant a pre-check lane? And my answer is you get those agents down here because we're going to have two lines. But that's a discussion between us and the federal government.
Great. Are there any other questions? Awesome. Thank you very much. Dave, would you take us to Resolution Q? Isn't it? It says here facilities. Resolution says facilities, but okay. All right, package page 55, anyway. Okay.
This is Resolution Q of transportation also. Authorizing acceptance of a New York State Upstate Airport Economic Development and Revitalization Grant for expansion and reconfiguration of the airport terminal and other projects at the Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport. And I so move that.
Seconded by Dave. All right. Mike.
Nine of us heard this presentation earlier at Transportation Committee. All 14 of us have heard it tonight. This is the real deal. Voting for this resolution starts the work to make this project happen, and it commits us to spend the money. So there isn't another vote in another 2 weeks. This is the one. I just want everybody to understand that. And if you have any questions about that, you should ask them now.
Mike, did I see your hand up? Sigler? Okay, Deborah.
This is a question for Jason. Someone raised this question with me.
Sure.
The resolved authorizes you to sign agreements with the county, the state, third-party subcontractors, any organization that will be participating in the project. And there was a question raised about the source of the electricity that would be coming from off-site and whether this was authorizing you to sign anything relating to a particular entity. And the concern there seemed to be twofold. One was environmental, and the other was the fact that it would seem like we needed to go through some sort of bid process in order to agree to purchase our electricity from a particular place. I just want to be sure from you that this doesn't authorize you to bypass any rules that have to do with bids and process.
No. What you're referring to is a grant that we have an application into but have no project and no approved award. If that were to be the case, that would come back to you for approval and execution. All this does is authorize me to sign contracts related to this project, specifically the airport construction, bid contracts, or any contracts that are related to those bid documents. Any future grant applications that you may get related to this project will most likely require you to require us to come back to you for approval and authorization.
Thank you.
Yep. Any other questions or comments? Mike.
This is kind of directed to Mike Lane and you, I guess, because you guys know the history better. So say we do have to actually spend money on this as a county. We've never done that before, right? I mean,
Oh, I think that
we're not like Binghamton, where they invest. God, it's like $800,000 a year.
Two things come to mind. One was the resolution to bond the passenger facility bridge, which we did, right. But we didn't have to spend the money. And I think we bonded the money for the original terminal construction back in the 80s.
However, when I was elected in 2001, I beat a guy named Joe Lally. So after the election, I asked him for a cup of coffee, and I said, "So what do I need to know? You know, what's on the horizon that didn't come up in the campaign, et cetera?" He said, "The airport." That was 2001. He said, "I predict by the end of next year that the county is going to be putting a lot of property taxes into the airport." And we haven't. And that's important. It really is, because property taxes are really vital for the really basic human needs and all the other things counties are responsible for. There have been arguments about this over the years at the legislature about, you know, because there have been times when things really, there have been some pretty serious, scary times about the airport and what it would need. So I think it's an important value to say that it's an enterprise fund that in huge measure is in good shape and has a wonderful future thanks to Mike Hall and your team and your management. So this is not to be taken lightly. It's a good question, and I appreciate the opportunity to mention that. Anybody else? Ann.
So as far as the $4 million from NYSEG, so if we don't get that, what happens? Or we don't approve the whatever comes from NYSEG?
So there's so if you go back to that slide that talked about the amount that could be covered through PFCs, which would be about $3 million worth of the aid, the remaining $5 million would be other sources. If you look at that pie chart, there's about five or six irons in the fire. Five or six irons in the fire include federal dollars, it includes an NYSEG grant, includes a NYPA grant, it includes... includes NYSERDA. Actually, I don't think it's on here. I think we have a NYSERDA interest. These are all options to make up that balance. If none of it comes in, we have the ability to determine how much of it could be covered through PFCs. So you would bond, but then you would have PFCs being able to reimburse you for a portion of that bond. If you can't cover that whole bout with it, then you would have the question may come to you as to do you use possible fund balance to offset that so you don't have to bond as much? That's a possibility. I can tell you that you will probably get some level of additional funding outside of the PFC coverage. And I've learned this in my 4 months here that usually, you know, when Mike says something's going to happen and I try to doubt him on it, he prevails a lot of times, to his credit. And he knows this process, and you have a lot of different efforts to get different funding. So I think right now there is a possibility you could tap into your capital reserve fund if you need to, but you've got a lot of different options to cover this balance, including PFCs, including the different grant sources, whether it's from federal to NYSEG to NYPA to NYSERDA to those are the other ones I'm covering about. So worst case scenario, you may have to dip into fund balance. Best case scenario is you might not have to turn into any of it.
Thank you.
Henry.
Mike, have you talked to a federal government official about the FAA grants?
Yes.
And what indication did he give you?
Our federal elected officials have always been very supportive of our interests at the Ithaca Airport. And I would expect that to continue.
Okay. Shauna.
Yeah, I just wanted to see if Rick had actually looked at some of the numbers in regards to the increase in revenue that would be projected versus, say, a $14 million worst-case scenario. And I'm just using that number figuratively. Just to see, my fear is that I would not, I don't think anyone here would want to dip into our fund balance. And I just wanted to see if the numbers had actually been tallied and run.
The only work my office has done was on the PFC calculations and the monies that we have now going into it to try to formulate that. We have not conducted any investigation into pro formas going forward as far as what Mike referred to as the operating statement. In other words, projected revenues, projected expenditures into the future. We have not conducted that analysis.
And we're talking about the airport fund balance, not the county's fund balance in all of this. Okay. Can I ask, on the resolution, just a quick thing, Rich, I'll get to you. Line 26, should we mention the Transportation Committee in here as well? Or instead, or... What?
It only went through the Transportation Committee, so I was going to make that correction.
Okay, so instead of facilities and infrastructure. Okay, thank you. Rich?
I was just going to speak in support of the resolution. It does seem like this debt service is manageable, and we may be able to cover it entirely. Having recently flown through JFK down in New York City, which is so far past its useful life, and you think about it as the front door for New York City, it's embarrassing. And this is, I think, a very forward-looking project that will project to everybody coming through our front door that Tompkins County is a place they want to come to. This is a really good project. We're so fortunate we have New York State support. I would anticipate the federal government will step up as well on such a good project, and I urge my colleagues to vote in favor as well. Thank you.
John.
I'm sorry, just for clarification. Jason, were you referring to our fund balance or the airport fund balance?
You have both options. You have both options. You have actually have multiple options. You have capital reserve fund. You have your unassigned fund balance. You have airport fund balance.
Okay.
You also have something that hasn't been mentioned, and because of Mike and his team's ability to manage operations, you are generating consistent surpluses that provides the capacity to take on some debt service out of the operating budget.
I just want to say several things. One is, Mike from the get-go has been committed to, and I am as well, to ensuring that you try not to use any taxpayer dollars in this program as much as possible. You don't do it in your operating budget, and if we can do that through the capital, that's going to be the number one goal that we strive to. I'll also say that I've done some pro forma work. I've looked at the finances behind it. I feel comfortable, even though there's not absolutism in every known element right now, but I feel comfortable, moving forward and suggesting you consider it. We'll begin to finalize things as we go down the road, but there's nothing right here from my perspective as your budget officer would I suggest that you have to halt this and not move forward. I can't give you any guarantees, but from my experience in dealing with this and looking at it with Mike and the engineers, I think you feel relatively as comfortable as you can moving forward right now.
Anything else?
Can I answer your question?
Are we ready to vote?
Have a roll call, please.
Sure.
Mr. Lane?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Morey?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Ms. Black?
Yes.
Ms. Champion?
Yes.
Ms. Dawson?
Yes.
Mr. Granison?
Yes.
Mr. John?
Yes.
Ms. Kellis?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Ms. Corman?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
So happy to say yes.
14 ayes, 0 noes.
Thank you, Mike. Very, very exciting. All right, we'll come back to the Transportation Committee. Thank you very, very much, Mike. We really appreciate all of this information. I would like to go to packet page. Wait, where'd it go? The IDA resolution. I just looked. Packet page 20. I am informed that John Guttridge is in the, hiding in the back corner. So, Anna, would you go to... No, let's just... He's going to... Let's take I off the consent agendas. Okay, so Anna, you want to take resolution I?
I'd be honored. This is resolution doc ID number 7859, appointments to Industrial Development Agency. I'd like to make one correction to remove the S. Hopefully that's a manifest change. Otherwise, I'd like to introduce that.
Seconded by Leslin. Any discussion?
I just wanted to, I mentioned that we would be bringing this forward tonight and asked if John could come so that we could all meet him in person. So I just wanted to invite him to the table to introduce himself.
I will say first that the IDA, the IDA slash TCAD put out a call for applications to the public. And thank you, Rich, for making that happen. And there were a number of very qualified applicants, and pleased to be here with you, John. Welcome.
Thank you.
Do you want to say a few words about why you want to be in the IDA?
Yeah, so my name is John Guttridge. I'm, for those of you who don't know me, I am the owner of Brightworks Computer Consulting and Urban Core LLC, which is the developer behind Press Bay Alley. I've been a member of the State Theater Board for a number of years and on the Downtown Ithaca Alliance Board for the last 7 years now. And so, you know, I've been involved to some extent in economic development in this community, and I've seen the impact that the IDA can have. And, you know, I've seen what happens when it functions well and when it delivers the incentives that get these projects done in our community. I think that, you know, the opportunity to participate in the growth of our community in this way is really an honor, and I really appreciate being considered for this position. I'm excited to do this work.
Thank you very much, John. Any discussion?
Any questions?
Ready to vote? All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you
Welcome.
So much.
Welcome,
thank you.
Welcome, John. Now, I hate to do this to Sue, but I think all will be better if we take a 10-minute break and then come back, and you'll have a happier crew to talk to. So we'll be back in our seats in 10 minutes. Thank you very much. Okay, folks. We have a lot of real business tonight. It's not going to be one of the 7:18 meetings, obviously. So let's go get started. And I'm going to go. All these other reports are going to wait because we have. Let's do the consent agenda. Barb's waiting, and then we'll go to Shauna to the Child Development Council proposals. Is that okay? So I am going to read through the consent agenda, and if you have anything you'd like to have pulled off, just shout out. Okay? Resolution A, award of bid, construction of food scraps, transfer building, Department of Recycling and Materials Management, ID 7841. Resolution B, budget adjustment, Department of Recycling and Materials Management, ID 7842. Resolution C, Dave, you want to pull that one off?
Yes, I am.
Oh, okay, that's... Well, you're withdrawing that altogether, right?
I'm withdrawing that until such time as we pass the actual project.
Okay, got it. Resolution D, authorizing supplemental agreement number 5 with CNS companies for general airport consultant services, snow removal equipment, multitasking equipment, design and bidding services, Ithaca-Tompkins Regional Airport, ID 7845. Resolution E, authorizing supplemental agreement number 6 with CNS companies for general airport consultant services, snow removal equipment, ramp dozer equipment, design and bidding services, Ithaca-Tompkins Regional Airport, ID 7846. Resolution F, award of spring 2018 community celebration grant, ID 7831. Resolution D, strategic tourism planning board implementation grant, visitor journey, A2D Ambassador Training Program, ID 7868. Resolution H, authorization of New York State Department of Transportation, Mass Transportation Capital Project Agreement, Tompkins County and Tompkins Consolidated Area Transit Incorporated. K, K007262, Supplemental Agreement 1, ID 7837. Resolution I, we already did. Resolution J, appropriating funds from the Tompkins County Natural Infrastructure Capital Project for the Tompkins County Du Bois Road Ditch Stormwater Improvement Project. ID, that's an inside joke. ID 7863. Resolution K, making a negative declaration determination of environmental significance in relation to resolution number blank of 2018, appropriating funds from the Tompkins County Natural Infrastructure Capital Project for the Public Works Facility Stormwater Improvement Project, ID 7870. Resolution L, appropriating funds from the Tompkins County Natural Infrastructure Capital Project for the Public Works Facility Stormwater Improvement Project, ID 7869. Resolution M, authorizing a contract with Tompkins County Soil and Water District to provide interim financial assistance to support conservation-related activities, ID 7872. And Resolution N, supporting Senate 8421, amending Section 224 of New York State County Law to permit Tompkins County to appropriate funds toward the development, maintenance, and management of affordable housing, ID 7858. And the appointments are to the Municipal Electric. These are all changed. Okay, got all of them? Got it. Okay. No appointments, right? Is there a motion on the consent agenda? Moved by Leslin, seconded by Deborah. All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? Thank you. That's unanimous. All right. Are we all set with Barb? Were there any specific questions, quick questions on the resolutions A and B? I know there was email traffic, so that there was a lot of good explanation on email. Okay. Wonderful.
Questions?
Okay. We're going to get the screens up. Hold on. We're going to put the screens up. It helps the cameras, so hold on a sec. Ann had her hand up.
I just wanted to thank Barbara Ekstrom for sharing about LGBTQ Pride Month with her employees. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Let's go to Shauna. You have a couple of resolutions about involving the Child Development Council.
Sure. First one is resolution number O. Authorization to pay cost of new mandatory training for daycare summer camps and seasonal employees. And this resolution was brought forth by Sue Dale Hall because there was a concern for summer daycare providers that receive daycare subsidies for some of their camp students. And there are new regulations that require a new training.
Okay, let's get a second. Second by Anna. And Sue, would you come on up to the table? We have Sue Dale Hall, Director of the Child Development Council of Tompkins and Cortland Counties. Right. Sorry, go ahead, Shauna. Thank you.
That's all right. Sue can actually explain it better than I can.
Okay.
Child care summer camp programs that are usually enrolled through the health department to provide care for mostly school-aged children, also receive child care subsidies for low-income children, and that makes them fall under the federal regulations that would require them now, everyone in child care, including those summer camp program teachers and all staff, to receive a five-hour training, prepared curriculum online. This came as a bit of a surprise to them. We announced it to them as soon as we were notified at the camp meeting that we hold every year, along with Tompkins County Youth Services. We hold that meeting and the Department of Social Services in April. and there was great concern that the summer camps would not be able to afford the cost of 5 hours for each individual. It's the time to spend on it. There's not a cost actually for the training. So together with the Department of Social Services and Tompkins County Youth Services, we're proposing to reimburse them for their time for this one year, and that then we're hoping in the future they'll be able to plan ahead for that as a cost of their doing the business and providing the service to folks.
Anna.
Sue just shared something with me that I that addressed one of the questions that many of us had, that the cost, that the regulation is for those facilities that take subsidies for children that there are subsidies associated with. One, which I think is important, two, that that this money will is only a one-time for 1 year, right? And so next year they'll have to put it in their budget, which may ultimately end up being acting like what we see as unfunded mandates, because it's now a requirement, which means that it could potentially be the case that their fees could increase because they are fee-based. Is that correct?
Yes.
Just wanted to make sure people understood that.
Okay. But obviously, so that the enrollments went out and everything happened where fees were established and parents signed up before you knew about, they knew about this expense. That's the deal.
Enrollment's happening almost as we speak. It'll be, camp usually starts the first week in July, but they're busy hiring their staff and getting them trained. So they're expending the funds and they didn't know where the funding was going to come from to pay them.
Okay. Henry?
And was this a new requirement just of summer people?
No, it's a requirement that affects all the regulated types of care and any organization that qualifies to receive child care subsidies. So that could be, in this particular case, they're called legally exempt from the child care regulations. They're groups, though. So they get enrolled through the Child Development Council on behalf of New York State. So it's any federally supported through those child care subsidies that start at the federal level, move to the state, come down to the local for low-income kids to get that summer camp experience. The programs that operate year-round are building that into their child care training requirements.
Okay.
So they're all required to take it, but they're paying for the cost of it.
Okay, so this is just the summer people who are caught unaware?
Exactly.
Any other questions? Ready to vote. All in favor of the resolution, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Okay, Sean, the next one.
Resolution number P, authorization to fund planner developer for a group family child care network. ID 7878.
Is there a second? Leslie seconds. Sue.
Yep.
this is a new thing for us. So why don't you tell us about it?
I'll give you the short version. How's that?
Yes, that's. I mean, I think it's important for the public to hear, and just to get us all on a brief summary to get us on the same page.
So for the last several years, I've talked with the legislature about the need for more child care in our community. Only one-third of the children under the preschool age have access to quality, regulated child care. And it's been a growing concern and a growing need. We've heard from the Tompkins County Area Development and the Workforce Investment Board that they're not able to find workers, and one of the reasons is because there's just not enough child care for those workers. And they asked me at the Workforce Investment Board, what can we do to get non-participating folks into the workforce? I think having child care available is one of the ways to do that. So last fall in the budget process, the legislature put aside $50,000 for each of 3 years to try to address the child care supply issue. To back up the clock, that came out of contingent fund, the contingency fund. To back up the clock, though, we've been working with a number of folks locally to try to make figure out what's the best approach, short of wiping the slate clean and starting with a whole new system, which isn't likely in this political or social atmosphere. We've had a number of conversations and looked at how what's happening in other communities. I would say that I thought that John Guttridge was here to for us, for childcare, because he's one of the early folks that I talked to in his office. We're trying to figure out, he sort of seeded this idea of a group family childcare homes and how we could grow them as opposed to building very expensive childcare centers. You mentioned TC3, the cost of that is pushing up towards $6 million now, I believe. It's really expensive to build a child care center. So we're looking at alternatives for our community. And Tompkins County has really been a leader in trying to move some of these things forward. I'd also like to acknowledge that, you know, Martha's been out there trying to identify what development projects have been going on and how can we get in on it to try to recognize the need for more child care. Anna's our consummate matchmaker, hooking us up with sort of everyone.
Anytime.
And Leslyn also, as a champion for childcare, was one of the ones to help push this forward last fall. So what we're looking to do is to sort of a two-pronged approach. One is the housing stock in Tompkins County. We're focusing mostly on home-based childcare because the cost of center-based care is so high. We're looking at group family child care, which is a little bit larger than a family child care. So it has more stability, has lower turnover rates, and there's more than one caregiver in the home. It's care provided in the home of the provider. So we're looking at the housing stock is just not really conducive. It's old. There's radon, there's not enough of it, and it's not affordable. And so we know that Tompkins County has a goal to increase its available affordable housing, and we would like that housing to also meet the needs or the specifications of childcare so that people can do a business in their home and offer that service. So our very first approach is to have some ready-built spaces. Let me just give you two quick examples. One is that if we built, you know, we have high rises coming out now. A lot of the people are building up. That childcare on the second floor on up doesn't usually work for those homes don't usually work for childcare because there's not two ways out. You have to be able to get out in the case of an emergency. So we would propose then for folks to look at the bottom floor apartments, maybe anchor places that could have two ways out that could also be feasible for child care. We're also looking at group family child care townhouses, maybe three in a row. If we had three in a row, we would be able to serve as many children as a small center, but at a lot less cost, and you're providing available affordable housing. So that's one. There's many, many pieces to that and how we could engage both the developers and the business community and making it meet our needs here locally. But that's one thread. And the second piece is to make sure that we make it sustainable. So we're looking at how can we reduce the turnover of child care. So family child care providers, group family child care providers, have to work about 50 hours a week with their eyes on kids all the time. And then outside of those hours, there's a lot of other business services that have to happen. They have to do their fee collection, their bookkeeping, their food menus, and maintenance of the home. And we're looking at ways that we can provide back office services that would support them and reduce that burden that they have on the administrative services. So we are proposing the use of the funding for a child care planner developer who would pull all these pieces together, who would be sharp enough to work with the business community, know what's happening on the front end before you know development really starts to happen, before it's too late and the project's already come to fruition, and who can understand the child care regulations and the specifications that are needed for child care. Deep breath.
Fantastic. This is so exciting to me. And I like I'm thinking, should I apply? I love this. Mike.
I'm just wondering, is there already a large daycare like Cornell who already has those back office services? Because that's a great idea. And if they're already doing that, then...
They do it only for, the Cornell site. There are large centers, and they could feasibly be the hub or the link and provide those back office services for the family child care. In Cornell's situation, that's a proprietary child care. It's Bright Horizons. It's managed by an organization outside of Ithaca. It's very feasible that a child care program that already has to do some of those services could provide that. And I think that's part of what we would look at. How would that be managed? Is it contractual? Do we work with existing organizations in other ways? Yep.
I think the Child Development Council, you do a lot of this kind of support for providers already, so it's very much in your wheelhouse. So,
we do, but we don't do payroll. We do our own payroll, but we don't do payroll, so maybe that would be something that would contract out, or we would have a management services organization with some skills in that area to do that kind of thing.
Shauna?
Yeah, for this position, will there be performance metrics to show if this position is successful in their job performance?
Absolutely. I think that the big goal is to increase the supply of child care. But there are lots of other things that we can measure along the way. And it's new. It's different. There are pieces of it that are done in other parts of the country. The family child care networks are done. And so we can draw from some of their experiences, but also we want to monitor what does it mean for us here in Tompkins County.
Ann?
I'm a home inspector, so I have a home inspection question. Are all the, you mentioned radon, are all the homes tested for radon?
Absolutely. Yep. Great. And a lot of other things. The water's tested, and every if they're on a well, there's a lot of things that happen. One of the things that we'd really like to do, we have a Cornell student doing some GIS mapping along travel corridors so that if we can reach out of the city center to some degree and make sure we can hit some of the rural areas, we could put it along travel corridors so that we make sure that it's accessible to, throughout the county. Child care can be available everywhere.
So there's a collective impact group that I know you've been working with around child care. Did this come out of that group in any way, or is it sort of a side thing?
I think you're referring to Cradle to Career, and there's a lot of different perspectives that are represented on what it takes for a child to be have a happy, healthy life by the time they're hit that career stage. So child care does come underneath it. We haven't talked a lot about this project yet, but I think it will certainly come up. I think mostly what Cradle to Career is focusing on are things that where the human services organizations can have a stronger impact together. And this one bridges both the private sector and the nonprofit sector together in a different way.
Anna?
I wanted to applaud you. I think you're pulling together something here very complicated. And I think that putting it instead of directly into making land, shovel ready, or adding a couple fences or a couple playgrounds that are that meet standards, state standards, doing this I think will have a much greater impact because this person will be able to coordinate with developers from the onset. You've already started to work with Workforce Development Board so that they're aware of what you're doing and you can reach that avenue and have training mechanisms coordinated. So I wanted to just applaud you because I know this is going to bring together a lot of important pieces within the built environment and within the administrative backbone support. So I know it's complicated. There will be a lot of potential measures of success, hopefully, that will come out of this. Thank you.
Henry.
Is the intent to, since you said there was $50,000 for each of the next 3 years, so is the intent to make this a permanent position?
I think that would depend upon its success. I think we have to look at that as we go along. I'd like to be able to come back and say this is working and this isn't to all of you. I don't know that it would be solely funded by the county. I think that's sort of gets us going, gets us started. By the way, I think the resolution says for half a year, and that's because we're halfway through the year.
And it's a 0.7 FTE.
Right now, for what's funded.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Anybody else? Dan.
I guess I'll just maybe point out, for in case some people haven't absorbed this, that because of the way it was set up as an OTR, 3-year, we actually do have to vote it every year. It's not automatic.
That's
so we still have a little bit of control.
I would mention also that the idea of going directly to the developers early on, you know, Deborah, Sue and I talked about 210 Hancock Street with Paul Mazzarella, I don't know, a couple of years ago, and it was actually already too late. Mm-hmm. I mean, they didn't have a shovel in the ground, but it was too late, you know, because especially the exit, two exits from a first floor apartment, windows, a certain kind of window you have to have, that sort of thing. So I'm going to suggest that you find the people who are working on Milton Meadows right now. That's the place in Lansing. East Hill Village, I mean, you and I, we talked at the Charette. They're still pretty early in, and so they're very much aware of this. But Milton Meadows is another. I'm sure they're not aware of it yet. David West is a new hire in the planning department who is mostly going to be focused on housing. You should touch base with him as well, so he knows that this opportunity exists. Anybody else? Deborah.
Yeah, I would hope that you could also leverage your relationships with TCAD and Workforce Development Board and whoever this person is. You've set very ambitious goals for them.
Yeah.
So I would hope that you could find plenty of places in the public, private, and quasi-private sector to help. I do think that this is an endeavor that deserves a great deal of support, including financial support from our major employers, because I hear a lot about workforce development issues and the shortage of qualified people. And if qualified people are kept out of the workforce because they can't find childcare, that's an employer problem, and employers ought to be contributing to its solution.
I was talking today to someone who's in California, but they do a nexus study every time a new business comes in to look at what the impact on the community is going to be. And they include things like childcare in that nexus study because, you know, you need it. They know they need it. They're measuring that when they choose to come here or not come here. So it's an important point.
Anyone else? All right, ready to vote? We have a short form roll call.
Mr. Lane?
Yes.
Ms. Corman?
Yes.
Are there any no's? That's unanimous. Sue, thank you so much. This is really creative and ambitious and visionary, and good luck.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Thanks. Exciting.
Okay.
I better go write a job description. No, I love anybody. In my way. Martha?
Martha. My first career was teaching childcare. So, is anybody else waiting for anything? So, should we go back to the beginning of the meeting? So, I think that's where we are. For my report, really nothing that's, I'll talk about a couple things during the Housing Committee report. I do have these appointments. To the Municipal Electric and Gas Alliance, Katie Borghella. To the Workforce Development Board, Kit Kephart, Derek Burrows, Scott Pronti, Alan Bishop, Mary Stasi, Amy Isles, and Michael Stamm. So those are appointments, and that's my report tonight. Any questions? Okay. County Administrator, Jason Molino.
Thank you.
I have a few things to report on. One is the shared services plan. That's kind of been forgotten, but shouldn't be. Last year, there was a state mandate put out there that counties had to either create a plan and approve it last year or do it this year. We were one of a handful that did it last year. And a part of our responsibility, or not responsibility, but attempt is to implement part of those recommendations. There were six specific recommendations. And if we were to implement them, we are eligible for some form of reimbursement or funding, but that has yet to be determined and scoped out by the state. I spoke today with some colleagues of mine that I've worked with before at the Department of State about this. The guidance document to be coming out in the near future, the next few weeks, as to how you document and then show that you're implementing it. Just to refresh your memory, there were six specific recommendations that were adopted by the legislature. The TCOG Training Academy, which is up and running, was one of them. There was the creation of a maintenance of a service modernization plan for municipalities. This is using LaserFiche through all municipalities. There was a purchasing pool through financial software. I don't know if that's moved anywhere right now, but it was a low-dollar savings. There was countywide mass notification, which we have, which was Swift 911, has been up and running. And then there was a purchasing pool to facilitate the conversion of streetlights and high-efficiency LED fixtures, which I believe is being talked about through TCOG and a subcommittee of it. Lastly, there was the incorporation of two additional municipalities for the healthcare consortium, which I believe is still in the works, in addition to some other efforts that will be talked about tonight. Point is you've got three or four of them that have been completed or are near completion, with the other two that are in the works. So that's a positive thing. And I told them that when the guidance document comes out, we'll be ready to submit our report at the end of the year, and hopefully be able to recoup some of that financial aid that we don't quite know what it'll be yet, but some type of aid that we'll get in return for completing that. So I just want to bring everybody up to speed on that. More to follow as we get closer in some of that guidance document. Also bring it to GO. Talk a little bit about there when we have more information to talk about. Two other things. One of the things that was put on my plate early on was solving the space problem here, or space issue of office space downtown. Just to let you know, I have not solved it yet, but have been working with F&I and IRL. IRL and I have sat down and talked about trying to map out some timeline and milestones to have a recommendation to the legislature, or at least to the F&I committee. Right now we're going to work with our consultants, Holt, and try to get a timeline that by September we have some tangible discussion piece and recommendation for consideration. They're all intertwined, the three downtown buildings, primarily the four downtown buildings, and want to come to you with a comprehensive approach to something rather than a piecemeal approach. So right now we're shooting for a timeline of September. I have more to follow with that. Lastly, but not least, in case you felt the burden, you are now a proud property owner of additional property downtown. We closed on Thursday for the Tompkins Center. We have the keys, and we own the place. So congratulations. Closed on it last Thursday, and in the process right now, the memorandum of understanding has been finalized with all the partners, so they'll be coming to sign that document. I'm working on the leases right now with all individual partners, and hope to distribute that to have the lease signed and executed starting January 1, 2019. I'm going to work with Rick over the course of the next few weeks to develop the budget, not to develop the budget, but to how we track the budget. Should it be done through an enterprise fund? Should it not be done through an enterprise fund? Should it be done through a normal budget? We have yet to get together, but we will shortly, so it'll be packaged up, ready to go for budget time.
Thank you, Jason. Any questions? Henry.
What's the status of the climate survey?
Oh, yes. Good call. The climate survey, I believe we achieved our goal of exceeding or meeting 70% participation. Closed last Friday, I believe, Sunday. And right now the consultants, or the third-party consultants, are working to accumulate the information, assemble it. I believe that's supposed to take about another month and a half, and then probably early to mid-July, we'll start to get together. The implementation team and leadership team will get together, start to analyze it, bring it forward, and it'll be shared with the legislature, and how we roll that information out to the workforce will be presented at that point in time. But good thing is participation achieved 70% participation. 3 years ago, it was 62%. So that was kind of the internal goal of doing better than we did last year, 3 years ago.
I have a question about the shared services plan. Yep. There were two items that weren't ready for the plan, but they were kind of in the wind. Mm-hmm. And I asked Joe at the time to kind of put them on the list. I think he might have actually, if I remember correctly, actually did add them sort of as future things. One was countywide code enforcement.
Yes.
And the other was fill in the blank something between the sheriff's office and Ithaca Police Department, sort of following up, investigating possible shared space. Or did you have something? Is there something on there?
Yep. There was a one mention about the panel found the code enforcement function has links to land use authority, municipal governance. Centralization of the function may result in cost and quality benefits similar to assessment. And the law enforcement had to do with it was underwritten by a Department of State grant, and options that should come from that should be looked at with respect to if there's any participation of other law enforcement agencies to consolidate law enforcement, because I believe it was Village of Cayuga Heights, Dryden, Groton, and City of Ithaca.
So what happens with that kind of idea? Isn't this panel supposed to keep going? Or
I asked that question. I didn't get really clear guidance as to what are the next steps. I mean, if I remember correctly, is you were supposed to put forward recommendations, and then those recommendations were re-implemented. These are not necessarily the implementable recommendations. These are kind of honorable mentions, if I could say. They're things to consider, recommended areas for additional in-depth review. That wasn't necessarily a requirement under the statute. So these are, at some point in time, like one of the ones that it was also in here was the back office administrative services for municipalities. These are things that can be taken up at a later point in time. Like I said, they're kind of honorable mentions. There wasn't a requirement under the statute to make sure that they were followed through or implemented.
Right, and I mean, they weren't ripe at the time.
Right.
And so it was just a way of keeping them on the list, so to speak. So my question is, what happens?
Well, I mean, I think what happens is, when we look at next year's work plan, we start to evaluate these points of discussion that the legislature has an appetite for, and if so, then we tee it up for next year and start to look at it.
Okay. Thank you very much. Anything else for Jason? Thank you. County Attorney Bill Troy.
Actually, Deputy County Attorney Troy. Report. And Jonathan Wood, I believe, has been in touch with members of the legislature on different issues. I can't add much to what he said to you.
Okay. That's actually a longer report than he usually gives.
I worked at it for days.
Are there any questions for Bill?
I have no report.
I thought I'd be a little Shakespearean.
Thank you very much, Bill. Finance Director Rick Snyder.
I placed in your red packets a short contingency fund report. If you turn to your red packets, there's one sheet of paper printed on the front and the back, I believe, and one side is the 2017 final contingency report. The other side is the 2018 figures year to date. If you look at 2017's contingency fund, we budgeted $1.1 million to be used out of contingency. That long list there shows all the resolutions that the legislation passed during the year. The last four or five are ones that I was required to do to balance budgets and complete funding for a number of items from assigned counsel, various insurance costs, Francisco Racker Center. They're really not that big. I usually have to do a lot more budget adjustments at the end of the year to balance the books. But when you total it all up, we spent about $1 million out of your contingency fund for the year, leaving $92,000 remaining at the end of the year. Last couple of years preceding this, we usually spent all of our contingency funds, sometimes having to go even further into general fund balance for some late in the year budget adjustments. But this is the final tally of the list that will be included in our financial statements that will be presented to you in the beginning of July. And then the reverse side, 2018, we just finished posting all budget adjustments so that Kevin could do his modified 2018 budget and get the department packets out to all the departments soon as we begin to work on the 2019 budget. So he wanted to have all the budget adjustments caught up, and we've been able to do that in the last week. And so you can see that out of a $1.3 or $1.4 million contingency, we've only spent $186,000 so far with about 10 or 12 budget adjustments from your contingency. The amount that is still available in your contingency for this year is $1.2 million. Any questions on this?
Deborah?
So this $92,000 balance that's available from the 2017 contingent account, I mean, aren't we past using stuff from 2017? I'm confused.
Well, as we close the books, it takes us up until about 2 weeks ago till we close the 2017 books. Okay. That's how long it takes to do all the year-end statements and all the journal entries and all the budget adjustments. And so all throughout the year, the departments put forth these resolutions. And at the end of the year, I have to monitor every single department to make sure that they haven't gone over the budget. And so this is the final tally of what's come out of the 2017 contingency for 2017 expenditures.
So would there have been anything that carries over to a later year, or is this $92,000 now just kind of rolled
back? That just goes back into the general fund at the end of the year, and then you reappropriate a new contingency at the beginning of the next year, which is the 2018 contingency fund.
Thank you.
I'm wondering about board out expenses. I can't remember. Did we put them in a different, at one point they were in this account, or did we have them in the sheriff's budget?
We had a much larger dollar figure for board out expenses already in the budget for 2017, and we did not use what was in the budget, so it didn't need any further appropriation.
Okay, so we changed, because we used to pull it all from here, so we changed it and we put it, I remember. Okay. Any other questions? Thank you very much, Rick.
I have one other item for the auction coming up in 2 weeks. I just want to report from May 1st when I last reported that we had 19 properties going to auction. We're now down to 12. So just within the last month and up until the deadline for folks coming in to pay off their properties, we actually pulled 7 properties. 6 of those were redeemed. 1 was pulled for an environmental issue. And so as we go into the auction, that's scheduled for June 18th, which is down at the space at Green Star on West Buffalo Street. On June 18th, it starts at 7 o'clock. We have 6 residential properties, and we have 6 vacant or commercial properties. And that's just a quick update for you on the auction, which is good news.
All right. Thank you. Questions on that? Thank you very much, Rick. Let's see. Are there resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? We've already withdrawn the one from facilities. Mike Ziegler. Resolutions to add?
Yes, I'm sorry. We are adding the Victoria one here. Resolution urging Governor Cuomo and the state legislature to amend state insurance law to allow public libraries and urban renewal agencies and certain other quasi-governmental organizations to join a municipal cooperative health benefit plan. That is resolution number R.
There's a second. Seconded by Deborah. This is a question of adding this to the agenda, and we'll bring it up at the end of the committee reports. All in favor of adding this to the agenda? Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Deborah. Anything else? All right. Then let's go to on our reports. Shauna. Shauna Black, Health and Human Services Committee.
We had a special meeting this afternoon, and our next committee meeting will be this coming up Monday from 4 to 6. We will have the Sophie's Fund come in and talk about the Zero Suicide Initiative. Also, Sharon McDougall and Frank will be presenting about the county's implementation of zero suicide.
Thank you, Shauna. Any questions? All right, very good. Facilities and infrastructure, Dave McKenna, Chair.
Thank you, Martha. F and I met on the 17th. We had discussion around resolutions that were on the consent agenda, as well as the one that I pulled from the consent agenda, and also a presentation from Barb Ekstrom involving the changes coming to recycling in Tompkins County. And all I can tell you at this point in time is there'll be more information coming on what those changes are down the road a little bit.
Thank you, Dave. Any questions? All right, thank you very much. Transportation Committee, Mike Lane, Chair.
Yes, Transportation Committee met on June 1. Most of the committee meeting had to do with the first rendition of the report we heard tonight on the airport grant and passing the resolution that has already been adopted. The second half of the meeting had to do with the beginning of our taking a look at the issue of ride-hailing services in Tompkins County. That's Uber and Lyft. A year ago, when the state passed the legislation that allowed these organizations to start operating, we were faced with whether we wanted to opt out of that and not permit that in Tompkins County. At the time, we did quite a lot of listening to the cab companies, to the folks from Lyft particularly, some from Uber. We heard from a lot of people out there that were interested. We heard from the university and others about that. We did not take any action, but we said, based on the number of different kinds of complaints that there were certainly in the national news about some of the ride-hailing services, that we would take another look at it in a year. The cab companies came to us and said, we think that it's time to start looking at that again. So we agreed and invited the cab companies to come in. We had representatives from two of them came in, neither of which asked us to opt out of ride-hailing services. But what they were complaining about to us was that they didn't feel there was a level playing field. In other words, they felt they were having to abide by the regulations of the city, particularly with fares, but the Uber and Lyft drivers were not. They also were making allegations that there may have been fixing of prices on the ride-hailing by pretending that they weren't really available for services so that their national organizations would raise the price per call because there were fewer cars out there. I have no idea whether any of that's true or not, but we heard that. And we will next hear from the representatives. We're going to invite them in from the two ride-hailing companies to talk to us about what their view of it is. And I've heard from a couple of drivers for Uber, and they want to tell their story too, and so they're certainly invited to come in and speak with us. No decisions being made at this point, just further investigation. We'll be continuing at our meeting next month.
Thank you, Mike. Any questions? Thanks very much. Government Operations Committee, Dan Klein, Chair.
Thank you. We will be meeting Thursday, June 7th, 9:30. And I want to mention a few things we'll be discussing. One is we have a revised version of the minutes policy, which might cause some anxiety in some of you, but try to relieve your anxiety. The current version that we are looking at eliminates the concept of notes. So if passed the way it is now, or similar to the way it is now, we would still continue to have minutes, but we would no longer have notes. So if that's something that you're interested in, either show up at the meeting or communicate with us ahead of time if you want some input into that at this stage. Another thing we'll be discussing is the review of the local boards of assessment review. I think
maybe all of us participate in these. I'm not sure most of us do in our local communities where residents can come in and challenge their assessments. And we got some numbers from the assessment department about how many people actually come in to take advantage of this. And those numbers are quite low and have gone down in the last 5, 6, 8 years, something like that. So we're going to start a discussion about whether we should continue that service in its current form. And then the other thing we'll be discussing, you may have heard some rumors that we're going to push ahead and try to redo the county website as quickly as possible, and those rumors may have come from me. But I'm here to walk that back a little bit. We are going to have Greg Potter from the Information Technology Department come in and talk to us about what we're calling a refresh, which is something that the website vendor offers, and to see what that might include and what we might want to do with that. But it looks like any kind of wholesale redoing of the website is going to be quite a ways off. And that is my report.
Thank you, Dan. Any questions? The minutes policy, that will come to us after the committee deals with it?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Is the idea to replace the minutes as they are with the way the notes are done now, or?
Kathy, do you want to speak to this? You have a better handle on it than I do.
Yes, that's correct.
All right. Thank you very much. Planning, Development, Environment, and Quality Committee. Anna Killis, Chair.
Yes. Well, a majority, a significant amount of the meeting that we just had covered all of the very long list of resolutions that were brought forward tonight. The other large component of the meeting was a discussion of the TCAD MOU contract renegotiation. So as all of you know, we're finishing up the five-year contract that we're currently, that we currently have with TCAD, Tompkins County Area Development. A third of their budget comes from the county. A third comes from fees through the IDA, and a third comes from their fundraising with businesses in the community. So this is the third specifically with the county. A component of that has been from room tax, the other component of that from property tax. We started a discussion of how the last 5 years have been going, what our expectations are for the next 5 years, what where the sourcing of the funding will come. That we had on the agenda about 10 minutes to cover that, and we needed more like an hour and a half. So there is a special meeting that has been set to continue that conversation so that we can dive in depth more into what the expectations are and the funding source for that contract to be considered. And that will be on the 14th of June at 1 p.m. here in the legislative chambers, obviously an open meeting for anybody who wants to join that conversation. You are welcome. And our next Planning, Development, Environmental Quality meeting will be on the 25th of June at 3 o'clock here in the chambers.
Thank you, Anna. Any questions? All right, great. Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee. Mike Lane, Chair.
We had a very brief meeting before this meeting in which we also passed the two daycare resolutions that we've already acted on. Our next meeting will be on June 12th at 4 p.m. here. No, I'm sorry, at the old jail.
Thank you, Mike. Any questions? Rolling right along. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Leslie McBean-Claiborne, Chair.
Thanks, Martha. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee met on the 23rd of May, and Jason gave my report already. Thank you, Henry, for asking him. And certainly it was a couple of days before the deadline for the workplace climate survey, so we talked a little bit about putting another push out to encourage people to take it, and obviously things worked. Thank you, Jason, and to others for making that push to get people to respond, because at that meeting, I think we were only like 50% response rate at that time. So we're very thankful for our employees for sharing their opinions, because we can't make change if we don't know what's going on. We continued our discussion about the CITAP, C-I-I-T-A-P, the Community Investment Incentive Tax Abatement Program of the City of Ithaca, with Heather McDaniel of TCAD and Janelle Spohn of the IURA. We began that discussion at our previous meeting with members of the city's Workforce Diversity Advisory Committee coming and talking to us about it. They mentioned TCAD. We wanted to know where the IDA was on it. It is now on. We did ask if the IDA will take a look at it. They had not seen it. And so I think it's now on the IDA agenda for our next meeting to sort of take a look, peek at, and see where we want to go with it. That was a very good discussion. We really appreciate them being there. And just updates on where we were in terms of the LGBTQ plus law enforcement policy working group. We've been working on putting out a survey to law enforcement, members of the law enforcement community, in terms of their understanding of policies and expectations around interactions with LGBTQ plus individuals. So we're continuing that, and we also, out of that meeting, came the proclamation for Pride Month tonight. That is pretty much what we've been working on.
Thank you, Leslyn. Any questions? All right, thank you. For the Housing Committee, we met on May 21st and spent a good deal of time on the on condominiums. You all got electronic copies of the study. All right, I'll talk about that in a second. Studied by the Cornell student who really did a tremendous amount of work talking to bankers and developers and realtors and a lot of folks about, as well as local government folks, about why is it so hard to do condominium development in Tompkins County. And so there's a one-page summary in the packet. There's about a 25-page report, and I think everybody got sent that. And one of the things that has sort of followed out of that and out of the discussion with Jay Franklin also was the idea of for sale unit taking duplexes, especially in the city but in other places as well, but taking duplexes and instead of rentals making them available for home ownership. We had a subsequent meeting including a number of staff and Tom Knipe from the city about that idea. And one of the key questions we had was, is this just a zoning issue? Do you have to do something different if this duplex over there is going to be owned by the residents or like half owned by this person and half by that person? Does it change the physical requirements? Does the code change? We got Mike from the city building department on the phone. He said no. He said the code, if it meets code as a duplex, it meets code as an owned home. You know, both sides owned separately. That was a big deal. That was kind of a big barrier we worried about. So then it was clear that it's on to the city to work through legal and financial issues. And basically we said, great, go and, you know, call us if you want us to sort of be involved in any way, because assessment's part of it and the planning department is part of it. So that essentially came out of this conversation, and I just want to report that that was a working meeting that a number of you also came to, and that was a really good little piece of news. The Megan McDonald presented data that she had worked on with Jay Franklin on residential structures and units built since 2010 and the residential units that are in progress and in planning. And I'm happy to make these weren't in the packet, but I'm happy to make copies for anybody who wants these. Just a short, really short summary, and this, you know, things built since 2010 is broken down by municipality, so it's really interesting. briefly, since 2010, we have created about 220 units per year, new units of housing. That sounds great, except that we think we needed more like 540 units a year, 520 units a year. So, you know, there's a decent amount of construction happening, but we have not kept pace. We haven't met the need that we need that we had, and certainly not for affordable or moderate cost homes. And then the residential development sites in progress, that looks better. It's not really knowable exactly. This sort of for the next couple of years, things that are known. They expect a grand total of about 6,500 new units that are already in the pipeline. And if you break those down by beds, it's 11,000. So if that actually comes to pass, say in the next 4 years, that's 3 or 4 years, that's picking up the pace. That's bringing a lot more supply into our community. It does, however, include 900-some units at Chainworks. We're probably a few years out from seeing those. So, and it includes Village Solar's, a big number there that are planned. And I'm not sure what, is that, Lansing folks, is that a project that's kind of on hold the last phase for a while? 333 units? Anybody know?
I think they're still moving forward with it as far as I know.
Okay. So some of these, you know, there are some affordable units, subsidized units in this mix, still really not the kind of numbers we need. But the pace seems to be accelerating, so that was good news. Just let me know if you want a copy of these things, too. Next meeting will be June 18th at 3 o'clock in this room. Let me also mention, we passed tonight this resolution about Section 224, about state law. There's a Senate bill that's mentioned in the title here. There's a very significant disagreement between the Senate and the Assembly. And the Assembly won. The Assembly feels they did the research, and the central staff found that there had been attorney generals' opinions from 1992 and 2003 on this issue. Can county governments spend local money on affordable housing? So the Assembly seems to firmly believe we already have that authority, and they believe that some counties are already spending local money on affordable housing, although they couldn't actually name any counties specifically and confirm that. But NYSAC continues to support our position that, gee, we really feel like we would feel safer with an actual, you know, local law, you know, a law that would identify that for Tompkins County. That's really not going to happen. The Assembly seems not interested in budging. So what NYSAC has suggested to us is that Jonathan ask the Attorney General for an opinion. So it's like these 2003 and 1992 opinions. That idea of taking that and getting a written opinion from the Attorney General. However, he does feel that we'd be in a much better position if we have the actual specific thing we want to spend the money on already prepared, decided, able to describe that before we go to the Attorney General. So all this is to say that we feel like whether we, you know, this Capital Reserve Fund that I floated last year that has been continued to be under discussion to try to bring forward to the committee and then the legislature sort of the best productive, the most effective idea that we want to propose, once we have consensus among this body of what exactly we want to do, then we will go to the Attorney General for that opinion. So we went ahead and passed this law about the Senate bill. Just get it on the record. It'll probably just be sent off and nothing else will happen to it, but I thought it was worth just going ahead and passing that today. So that's my report. Are there any questions? Okay. I bored you to tears already. Thank you very much. Public Safety Committee, Rich John.
Thank you, Martha. The Public Safety Committee will be meeting tomorrow at 3 o'clock here. And the major items that we have on our agenda, one is a report from Labella Associates, the engineers who have looked at our jail and have some sketches to show us on possible changes we could make to allow additional programming space, which we've talked about, next to the jail, current jail space. And also they prepared some sketches of what it would look like if we moved the road patrol and the civil division out of their current location into a standalone building. This is entirely hypothetical, I want to make sure everybody knows, but we had asked for this information, so we're going to get a report tomorrow on that. The other item that we're going to hear about is a report from the sheriff on school resource officers. We will not be taking any action on this subject tomorrow. It is merely informational, but it is possible a resolution would come to us in future months, but we're going to hear about it tomorrow. The one other item I'd note is that the July meeting of the Public Safety Committee is July 4th on the calendar. And so I just wanted to ask, who's with me? we probably need to reschedule that. I've also had conversation with Shauna and Anna about trying to do a joint meeting between Health and Human Services and Public Safety to talk about some of the issues that cross between public health and public safety. And we were thinking about July 3rd, so I just wanted to raise the flag on that date. We have a legislative meeting that day, and perhaps we could hold our joint meeting on July 3rd at 3 o'clock.
4 o'clock.
Well, I'm sorry. I was thinking public safety. We would take care of some business prior to that, so we'd get our meeting out of the way. So public safety at 3 o'clock, and then we'd have our joint meeting at 4.
So taking the place of your July 4th meeting with some business at 3?
Unless the consensus is that we want to have a meeting on the 3rd and the 4th. Okay. Yes.
Such popularity you would be. So.
I just want to know if there'll be sparklers.
I'm definitely.
If that's what it takes. If that's what it takes. Okay. Well,
might call for firecrackers, though.
All right. You'll confirm all that.
Yes. So. I don't want to take meeting time to try to schedule it, but I wanted to alert everybody to it.
Good. Okay. Great. Any questions for Rich? Mike.
I know it's just an informational meeting about the resource officers. Is there a reason that's happening at the county level and not at the more local level?
There's been a request from BOCES to consider it for a school resource officer at their facility. And again, we're not taking any action, but that's why the request came to the sheriff's office.
Thanks.
Anything else for Rich? Thank you very much. Let us go to your red folders where we have resolution R. Mike, to move it.
Sure, I'd like to move resolution R, resolution urging Governor Cuomo and the state legislature to amend state insurance law to allow public libraries and urban renewal agencies and certain other quasi-governmental organizations to join a municipal cooperative health benefit plan.
Thank you, Mike. Seconded by Deborah. Terrific. Oh, I'm sorry, Glenn. All right. Discussion. I'll start with Mike and Anna.
I'll be quick on this. It's just, you know, it's interesting how the sausage gets made, and that's why I always think things like this are interesting. Clearly, one of the best things we've done in the last decade is the healthcare consortium. It has saved us millions. I mean, we try to keep getting people to add into it. And it came up a while back when Joe was still here, and we met with Joe and Don Barber and Jen Tavares about maybe expanding this out to small businesses through the Chamber of Commerce. And then at a meeting in October, you know, right before the election, we all sat down in Cortland with Seward and Consortium. While they liked that idea, I thought that was a heavy lift, and they were probably right. Don said that's going to be a really heavy lift. But getting NGOs into the program might, you know, that would be a lighter lift, although still a lift. So Ben Seward's person who runs healthcare. Why Seward? Well, he runs that committee. So his person changed in December, and then it came back up in February because we had that meeting with Seward. He came here, and so now that's where we are. I saw him last week in New York City, and it's kind of like with the airport. Every time I see him, this is the issue I push with him, and I'm hoping you all do the same. So I was very happy when this came along. I thank Martha for pushing this out because it does put our stamp on it. But it also shows that there's a lot more advocacy that has to happen. So, you know, by all means, this would save a lot of these non-government organizations a lot of money. And then hopefully, you know, Seward was not hopeful. I'm going to be honest with you, not because he doesn't like the idea, but because there are about 300 bills in front of the Senate right now. There's 3 weeks left, and he thought they'd maybe get to 30 of them. So there's just a lot going on in the Senate that probably won't get done. But he didn't rule it out. And he said, definitely, you know, either this session or next, this should be able to be done. So,
Anna?
Yeah, I know, Jason. I've heard you talk about this a little bit. We've had some discussions about the barriers to and the challenges to expanding this to nonprofit organizations. I thought it would be helpful if you shared that a little bit or talked to us about it a little bit.
Sure. You know, we've talked a little bit. I've talked with Martha a little bit as well. You know, the quasi-government agencies are generally the NGOs that we're talking about. In my conversations, brief conversations with NISAC, you know, the legislation was created for municipalities or school districts, which are very clearly outlined in state statute. When we did soil and water, again, it's an agency that's specifically outlined in statute. We talked earlier, that's how, I think, how urban renewal agencies got into this discussion. They have to be created through certain state laws. Some of the challenges that may come with this, which I think, Mike, you're alluding to, is that when you open it to NGOs, that's a very wide net. And I think the balance or the challenge that they may have at the legislature, the state legislature, is that if this is maybe viewed as opening it too wide, it may be viewed as circumventing health insurance companies, which have weight at the state level and may get shut down in that process. That's kind of the concern of the balancing act. So when this was crafted, the language, the definition of district, which outlines quasi-governmental, has certain references to the amount of funding that supports it, so that, you know, a certain amount of local government funding that supports the quasi-government agency, so it's still tied back somehow to a local government. You won't know that until the debate begins and until our legislators, you know, say, hey, this seems to be a problem or not a problem. But, you know, you're trying to balance it so that it doesn't get too much attention, so it can get passed where the health insurance companies won't object to it. That's kind of the balance. Urban renewal agencies can actually be, you know, there's certain statutes that authorize that to be created, kind of like soil and water districts. Even public libraries are authorized certain education law, you know, so that they have very refined statutory authorities to be created. When we kind of distance ourselves from that, sometimes it gets a little harder and the water gets a little muddier, but give it a shot, see what happens. And if this gets the first go around this session and there's some feedback we get, maybe we can tweak it to make it more effective next session. It's definitely worth the cause. I will also note that, you know, there is definitely, the governor is obviously part of a shared service initiative. This is one of those things that's been pushed by NISAC, it's been pushed by NICOM, it's been pushed by any, you know, the Association of Towns, which are your three major representatives of municipalities. And there's been, you know, pushes to saying, all right, if you want us to really push shared services, this is a real no-brainer. And this is always pointed to as the shining star in the state as an example. There are definitely some other hurdles outside of this that are trying to be passed with respect to the reserve requirements and number of participants to try to open up. There's a reason why there's only been one of these in recent years, because there's some hurdles that are making it hard to get to. So if this is on top of the state's agenda with shared services and cost savings to taxpayers, this is an opportunity to achieve that.
Thank you. Mike Lane.
I'm really glad to see this coming forward. I think it was just yesterday that the health insurance companies, the big ones, asked for huge increases in their premiums. And the more of these kind of organizations we can get into our organization will help us keep the costs down for everybody because we have more people involved. It's so sad. It's the people that don't have these organizations to join, the small businesses, you know, the single people that can't get even the ACA, that are having biggest increases in the policies that are proposed out there. So this is great, and I certainly support it.
I will say that NYSAC has been great. Mark Levine is really pushing on this. He's already met with Chair Cahill, and I think we should make sure we mention Cahill, and I can't remember his first name. Assembly member, we'll find it. Add that to the last resolve, because he's the chair in the assembly. And Mark told me that they're hearing directly from mayors, village mayors, city mayors, town supervisors, and others that, you know, they really want to be able to do this. So this is one little piece to expanding it. That's great. Deborah, thank you very much for bringing the rural library question to us. You know, that's why we got this in there. That's why they're in here, too. So let's talk some more about what kind of follow-up to try to push this, see if we can really move it. A lot can happen in 3 weeks if they want to. Yeah. So, all right, anything else? All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Awesome. Thank you. All right, minutes of May 15th, 2018. Moved by Anna, seconded by Rich. Any discussion? All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? Unanimous. Okay, I'm sorry, guys, but a motion to go into executive session. It doesn't have to be long. Okay.
For what purpose?
For a personnel issue. Mike?
Unfinished business. I want to say one quick thing.
Sure.
Fill out your surveys for the four direct reports out of the budget committee and budget personnel. We need them for the evaluations. Don't forget.
Thank you. Yes, it takes all of 6 minutes to do one. It doesn't take that.
It depends. So you got it, Leslie, because I pushed it out.
I did. Okay. Thank you very much. And Steve sends it again. Thank you.
Okay, great. All right. Motion for executive session was moved by Anna, second. Who did it? You're pointing.
I don't remember what the purpose of the executive.
For a personnel matter.
Personnel matter. Never say matter. More than that. A particular person?
Yes.
Okay.
Personnel matter for a particular person. Moved by Anna, seconded by Deborah. All in favor, please. And wait. Please raise your hands. Any opposed? All right. We do not expect to do any business after the meeting, so we'll wait 5 minutes and shut down the cameras. Thank you very much.